want to take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
I live among the creatures of the night.
That would be me, all right. Good morning. I'm Art Bell, and coming up in a moment, Sean David Morton, and I affectionately like to say the guy with more hits than Mark McGuire, and he does have a lot of hits. He makes predictions, and he makes them on the air where they are duly recorded. And the hit rate is absolutely astounding. I think most of you know that. And that's Sean Morton coming up in a moment. The headlines out there right now, folks, are that the weather is changing all around us. Right now here in the desert, it's raining cats and dogs, thunderstorms, you name it. We've got five more days of rain ahead of us. After a couple of weeks of rain, we shouldn't be having rain out here in the desert. Shouldn't be happening in areas where the rain ought to be. It is not. Forming over the northeast part of the country right now, as I said to my earlier audience, you remember The Perfect Storm, that movie about that storm, that the hurricane in the front that merged over the ocean, lost a fishing vessel, made the movie about it. Well, now we have the perfect storm perhaps forming on land, our land. These are two weather fronts that the meteorologists, for example, according to Reuters, say it's very unusual. It's not like anything we've seen in 50 years. And what could form from this is virtually the perfect storm, only it's going to be the perfect snowstorm. And the other bothersome thing about it may sit in one place. Bad as it gets, it may sit in one place, and that's going to make it much, much worse. So there's some things you really have got to keep your eye on out there going on right now, folks. It looks as though the Marine Corps has a new weapon, a directed energy beam weapon, microwave basically, that they say is a, won't hurt you, just makes you get out of the area kind of weapon. But in my way of thinking, if you have a microwave weapon, they say it just heats skin. To me, that means if it's on stun or go away. But what if you turn the dial up? A microwave is something, you can run the kind of power level you want. So you go from heating skin to heating what? We'll find out more about that. A hacker has some of our top secret U.S. space codes that control our rocket ships and satellites. Isn't that great? And we have a mysterious set of photographs on the website right now at www.artbell.com. Trucker in Salt Lake took the photos from his cab. To me, if I were to have to say, to describe what he calls a sky ring, I'd say, well, it might well be some sort of dimensional portal. And I know that's jumping through the big hoops. I know that. And it's going way out on a limb, and I know that. But that is kind of what it looks like to me. You be the judge yourself. Take a look at it. It's on my website. It says UFO in Salt Lake City. That's the one you want to look at. Now, with a crack of thunder, comes Sean David Morton. Let me tell you a little about Sean David. Since studying at the British International School in Cairo, at Stanford, and graduating from USC with majors in political science and fine art, Sean David Morton has been an investigative journalist and writer, director, producer for TV and films. In 1990, he was writer, producer, director for a 13-part documentary series called UFO Contactees, gathering over 600 hours of interviews with witnesses and researchers from all around the world for Randazzo Productions. In 91, Sean was instrumental in bringing Area 51 to international attention by finding a series of hilltops that looked down on the super-secret facility and filming the base for the first time. They now, of course, have annexed a lot of that land. He was one of the original writer-producer on-camera investigators for UPN's Strange Universe, has been a contributing writer for UFO Library magazine, written and produced sightings. Now it can be told, and hard copy. Was a frequent consultant for Unsolved Mysteries. While at Strange Universe, Sean did the first national stories on the Chupacabra and the UFO contactee case of Adrian. Ah, yes. While at Hard Copy, Sean produced the first national news segments on the Phoenix Lights and the conspiracy theories behind the death of Diana Spencer. Also wrote the first articles on the cover-ups behind the deaths of Diana, JFK Jr. and JFK Jr. Sean studied with the Dalai Lama in India, lived as a monk in Nepal, where he studied with the Black Hat Buddhist sect. It was there he learned meditative techniques that enhanced his own psychic abilities that we know about, allowed him to get in tune with the earth, induce visions, read maps, predict geologic events, and taught him to travel the time stream. His track record of predicting earth changes and catastrophes, economic trends, political events have been nothing short of astounding, bringing him to international recognition. Since 1993, Sean has been the publisher and editor of the International Monthly Magazine, Delphi Associates Newsletter, available by private subscription only, and we'll tell you about that as the program goes on. Here is Sean David Morton.
Thank you so much.
New York City, huh?
Hi, I'm at the New Yorker Hotel, the hotel where Nikola Tesla died.
Okay, back away from your phone just a little. You've actually got a hot phone. Most hotel phones are bad. This one's pretty hot, so get
okay. How am I doing now?
Now it's perfect.
All right, there we are.
So you can really relax.
Yeah, I'm at the New Life Expo, which is run by Mark Becker here, and I'm giving lectures tomorrow at 3:00, and then on Sunday at 3:00, and then a workshop at 5:00.
Busy.
And then an all day workshop on Monday, teaching meditation techniques and remote viewing basics as well. So that's what I'm doing throughout the weekend here. And as I said, this is the actual hotel that Nikola Tesla lived in and spent his last days in through 1943, or maybe the government faked his death or something. But
look around, see if there's any leftover gadgets.
No Tesla balls, no healing devices, no lightning rods.
How about just a picture of Tesla on the wall somewhere?
They don't even have that.
Oh, no.
This was the place where he spent his last days.
Well, then you should tell them. There should at least be a portrait of Tesla on the wall.
I'm not sure if they should actually put something up about, this is one of the guests who died here. I'm not, I don't know what kind of publicity that would be for the hotel, but it's,
I hadn't thought of that.
Right. Yeah, it's nice. It's an honor to be here, and it's great to, and it's just so great to be back on your show. I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you.
And, over the last month, you've just been, I've been listening to the program religiously as usual, and you've just been awesome. You sound rejuvenated and happy, and
I am.
Just back in the saddle, man.
Yes, indeed.
You just had, I know all the trials and tribulations you've been through, and I'm just, all I can say is I'm so proud of you that you've seen it all through and come back to us.
Very kind of you. Thank you. We have so much to talk about. And you know what? Let me start here.
Sure.
There is a prediction right now of virtually the perfect storm.
Yes.
Hitting the Northeast, where you are right now. They're talking about a foot of snow or more. I mean, they're really sounding worried. I've got the Reuters news story here, and apparently a cold front coming from Canada, just like with the perfect storm before, and all this incredible moisture sweeping out across us, moving east, and a front that they say is going to turn around, go in the wrong direction, are going to all collide and create this horrendous storm, maybe. You've been hearing about that?
Yeah, out here, and it's the only thing that I can say about it is that when I was doing meditations on the weather patterns and the weather forecasts throughout the United States, and then I published those in October, I stated very emphatically that I was getting what appeared to be an artificial energy that was coming out of Alaska. And I said back then that it looked to me as though a series of things were happening across the United States. And this was kind of strange, because the last time I was on the program, which was the December 29th show with Ian Punnett,
mm-hmm.
I had described in the newsletter that what I saw coming for the United States was a series of weather patterns that didn't look like weather. They looked more like terrorist actions, literally where the weather patterns would be 40, 50, rather balmy during the beginning part of a week, and then would slam down to very, very low temperatures, literally in the Midwest to 30, 40, 50 below with wind chill factors, that you would literally have summer on a Monday and then winter on a Wednesday, which has in fact happened in California, where we had, and it's, that was exactly the headline, was summer on Monday, winter on Wednesday, because it was 50, 60, it was about 65 degrees or so in Hermosa Beach where I live, and then on Wednesday, it actually snowed as far down as the San Fernando Valley.
And there's drought where there should be water and water where there should be drought.
Well, something's, and I realize this because then on February 19th on your show, you had people who had called in reporting these unusual radio signals. And of course, my prediction was that every time I went up to Alaska, I just got this white noise, you know, this harsh buzz that looked to me as though it was actually grabbing onto natural weather patterns and then slamming them down the western coast of the United States.
Well, let me tell you what I know. 3.39 megahertz, Sean, had a heart-pounding sound. I mean, this sucker was strong. Now, it went away, and I've just got news in the last 12 hours that it's back this time around 7 megahertz. Mm. They deny they're doing anything at HAARP, though they do have a schedule, but I think it was HAARP, and I think a lot of other people think it was HAARP, too.
Well, there's there's a series of these facilities around the world that when they turn them on, just create holes in the weather pattern. There's, you know, there's one in Alaska, there's another one in Canada, and this is not something that's limited to terrestrial phenomenon either. You and I both know that they used a version of HAARP in Desert Storm. And, remember a long time ago, 2 years ago, we were talking about this, how the Russians were actually offering to alter weather in Madagascar. Remember that story?
Oh, yes, absolutely. They were going to produce a typhoon there.
That is actually a space-based application, and that's the crude stuff that the Russians have. But this is a space-based application of the HAARP technology, and it's actually pretty easy. If you have one of these satellites in space, it can actually pound down ions into the onto the various jet streams on Earth and actually create these sort of whacked out weather patterns. Now, whether or not they're doing this on purpose, or the other aspect of this could be that they're cranking up the HAARP project for whatever military actions we're about ready to take in the Middle East. This could be the opening salvo of a renewed Star Wars platform, which Bush is talking about reactivating, and be some kind of warning to the Red Chinese, basically saying that, you know, this is the kind of thing that we've got and that we can induce either certain weather patterns, or some people believe that they can actually use these satellites to actually create earthquakes from space as well. This was there was a movie called Dark Passage. It was a Steven Seagal film where they actually had a pulse detonation satellite in space that is the real deal. I mean, Seagal spent a lot of time in CIA, and they can actually use these space-based satellites to induce quakes from space. So what's going on with the weather patterns just seems to me as though there's been a lot of monkeying around with the natural patterns of the weather using this using these artificial devices that generate gigantic fields of energy. And when they first talked to these various scientists about, well, what happens when you turn this thing on and it begins to grab onto the jet stream and begins to alter weather patterns all across North America, specifically coming through Alaska and then coming through the central part of the United States, I mean, literally, their quoted response in Popular Science magazine was, oh, well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, so, that's right. No, that is accurate. They do admit that this technology may well affect the weather at the higher power levels. And the signal I was hearing, Sean, was a much, much higher power level. And then after we noticed it was there, which, by the way, was unannounced on any HAARP page, it went away.
Yeah,
it went away and shifted frequency. So something's going, something's crooked, and I have a feeling it's us.
I sent you. Did you get the package that I sent you? That I mailed out early.
No, sadly, we did not. I have, of course, all the topics that we're probably going to cover if we have time tonight, but not the newsletter.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to, that I was sending you is I sent this off to you early Wednesday morning, and this was directly before the Seattle quake happened. But on page 13 of the newsletter, when I was actually scanning the maps, and we'll get into this because what I'd like to do is sort of move across the world in the United States, but I'll quote from the newsletter from February 21st. Moving across the United States, we're currently seeing this massive storm front settling in on the eastern U.S. We have a very hot summer to look forward to all across the eastern seaboard after this bizarre winter. Once again, I'm picking up earthquake activity in New York, picking it up in the Adirondack Mountains, all the way into Connecticut and New York, not big, but it appears to be a swarm of quakes. But once again, I saw this along with actually predicting a very deep earthquake in Seattle at the top of the Juan de Fuca Fault.
You predicted that in the newsletter?
This was February 21st. This is the newsletter I tried to send you. That's actually that's
all right. Well, by now, even though I don't have it in my, it doesn't matter. A million people out there, well, not a million, but a lot of people out there have that newsletter sitting in front of them. So you predicted a big quake.
Well, I'll give you the exact quote. This is from page 14.
Yeah, read it.
The newsletter.
Read it precisely.
Looking at Washington and Oregon, I am getting rumblings. The last half of this year is going to be hellish. I'm picking up rumblings around Mount Baker and the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Rainier activates with deep earthquakes in the 7.0 range. I'm getting the image of an old Indian man in a white cloak readjusting his position, almost as if his legs were asleep. So there will be rumblings and deep earthquakes around Rainier about a year or so before it blows. And that's from the February 21st news. That's what I sent you.
And as we all know, it was a deep earthquake.
It was about 40 miles down, I think.
30, at least 30 down.
It was the actual Seattle quake. But that's the top of the Juan de Fuca Fault. And in the rest of this newsletter, which is, if everybody subscribes tonight, this is the newsletter that everybody will get because it's the big predictions issue, that, now that we've got the top of the Juan de Fuca plate now activating, and the bottom of that same fissure that runs down the western coast of the United States down into Baja into Mexico, this is the trigger of activity that was talked about in many of the Mayan prophecies that has to do with Mount Popocatépetl actually coming to life outside of Mexico City, and the warnings that were coming down as far back as 1991 of the various Mayan prophecies and predictions of this world, the sixth world as it's called by the Mayan, of being that this would be earthquakes, that there would be man-made inducements of these quakes. Literally, the glyph for this is a totem that has very wide eyes with its mouth being torn open by what looks to be a human hand, showing that there are some kind of human actions that are taken that actually result in massive rippings of the Earth's crust.
Well, let me lay this one on you and see if it makes any sense. I've had a lot of people, as you know or may not know, there is a webcam focused on Popo all the time.
Okay.
And I've had people sending me a series of webcam shots from Popo, which show UFOs in the vicinity.
Well, I can explain to you exactly what they are because of the work that's been done by UFO contactee Carlos Diaz and his wife Margarita. And
explain to me, what are they?
Carlos has been having contact with these. He lives actually right in Tepetzlan, which is right near the foot of Mount Popo. Michael Hesseman was just down there just recently and has just done a fabulous documentary on Carlos. But I've known Carlos for many, many years. And one of the most interesting of the UFO contactee cases that I found, because Carlos deals with these ships that are not technology-based. They seem to be plasma-type craft. And this is the interesting thing about his story. On the one hand, you have what appear to be these hardware-based UFOs. People talk about the Pleiadians and the Syrians and physical machines and objects. But what Carlos is dealing with is these plasma craft. He's, for the last 18 years now, has had ongoing physical contacts with these beings. The Strange Universe crew, when I was there, went down there and actually filmed these craft, floating around his house. He has videotape of himself where he sets up the camera outside of his kitchen window, walks into a field at night shining a flashlight on himself where he calls one of these craft in, and it actually then physically appears on camera, just the thing that pops in.
I don't think I'd do that.
And, he walks around with his flashlight, shines it up at it, goes back in, gets the camera, points it at the bottom of the ship. And when I asked Carlos, what are these beings called? And, he's translating to his wife, Marguerite. And he says, I don't know. I call them the amigos because they're just my friends. I they don't tell me where they're from. And I said, have you ever been?
How does he know they're his friends?
Then I said, have you ever been into space? Have you ever seen anything out in space? And he says, no. I go into these craft, and we go into the Earth. And I said, well, what do you see while you're in the Earth? And he says that what they're doing is that they were taking samples of things on the surface of the planet, that inside these caverns underneath the Earth were what appeared to be these huge reddish-orange spheres, and that he at one point put his head into one of these spheres and could actually see animals, flora and fauna, almost like a kind of a galactic or a zoo.
I don't know, Sean. I think this fellow's a Darwin Award candidate for Mexico. Listen, stay right there.
Okay.
We'll be right back. We're headed toward the bottom right now. Shining flashlights, putting your head into the body of the beast. No, I don't think so. From the high desert, the desert of the sea, this is Coast to Coast AM.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may recharge at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To recharge on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Networks.
Can we know the future? Well, yes, I think we can. I, too, had a caller on the show that predicted a big earthquake in Seattle. It's what Sean David Morton does, and I don't know, after you've had enough examples of people doing what Sean David Morton does, what that lady did, and what a lot of other people did with regard to Seattle, you've got to, I guess, close your eyes and consider that, yes, it might be possible. People can predict. That sax is so good for my soul. It helps my flu go away. Sean David Morton will be right back. All right, back to Sean David Morton, who's in New York City right now. Sean, you're back on the air again.
Thank you, sir.
And where does the power to predict, the ability to predict, come from, Sean?
I wish I knew that. I could say that it's some people believe that the future exists, that time as we know it exists holographically, that it is a that it is all sort of happening all at once, that it's that the past and the present and the future are holographic in nature and all exist simultaneously with each other. However, I've seen timelines change, and I've also noticed that with, for example, the predictions of, say, Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce coming around the turn of the century, that their predictive ratios and hit rates have been, you know, Cayce was probably, you know, right on it up until about 1972 or so, and then his prediction ratio began to then drop off. Nostradamus, who knows, because there are so many
timeline problems.
So many interpretations of his prophecy. I think that there is an overall plan for the ascension of humanity, and that there's it's almost like a 4-year course in college that you can either do it the easy way and take all your classes at the beginning, you know, your freshman and sophomore year, which of course nobody does, or you know, wait till your senior year to get everything out of the way and then cram and study for it. The way that I learned how to do this primarily was just had to do with having a natural ability. It seems that magical sort of superhero stories are much more popular. You know, police scientist Barry Allen was mixing chemicals and was struck by a bolt of lightning and became the Human Flash. It's that's not the way it happened with me. I just had a natural ability that all my life I've been interested in this, and I've sought teachers out and people and individuals out to help me hone this ability. And it's been many years of study and training and hard work. I had the good fortune of meeting people like Dr. Russell Targ about 20 years ago, who introduced me to remote viewing. His daughter Elizabeth and I became very good friends.
In the Bible Belt, Sean, they would want you to say your power comes from God.
Yeah, but I could say that. But it's breath comes from God, life comes from God, spirit comes from God. I could say that in the same aspect of saying that when I put myself into this meditative state and I meditate on the maps, I can pretty much go where I want. Sometimes in the astral plane when I'm meditating, I do have angelic beings who physically stop me at certain locations, who will say, you're not supposed to know what's going on here, that there are literally futures that are being decided, that there are things in the astral plane that are, the election was one of those things. When I was talking about the 2 years ago, when we were on the show, and I said that there was that George Bush was going to be the president.
You did, yes.
But that there was something about the election, that there was that I was being stopped, I was being jammed, that there was I wasn't sure if there was even going to be an election at all.
Yeah, no, you know what it was?
What was that?
It was an astral Chad.
That's pretty much exactly right. I get to sort of cruise and go where I want to go. It is just that on the one hand, there is a predestiny, and I think that there is a plan that everybody comes to this planet with some kind of mass agreement that there are certain classes that we need to take, that there are certain experiences that we have to have as a group soul, as a group mind. How we get there, as to whether or not it's going to be the hard way through some kind of mass destruction or a global apocalyptic cataclysm, or whether or not it comes through a growing knowingness and comes through a gentle trickling down of the Christ consciousness into the atmosphere. We're seeing since 1985 a whole new sort of root race, what I call the children of the violet ray, are now being born, and that these children are now coming in with some of them are being born with an extra strand of DNA, with more access to the DNA. We're discovering now that the human DNA is sort of choked off at the top.
Now, do you really know that for sure, that we're having children born with an extra strand of DNA?
Well,
are you sure?
The interview that I ran once again, and this is in my current newsletter, actually the March newsletter, there was the March and the February newsletter, talks about a doctor in Mount Shasta that I ran an interview with specifically, who was stating that he's running into these children that he calls the children of the violet ray. And it's a long article in the newsletter, but
we must eliminate them now before they propagate.
Well, if you really think about it, and we think that that humanity has 46 base pairs per turn of DNA,
yes,
and that only separates human beings from monkeys and the majority of politicians by about two strands,
right?
And that they're now discovering that there's sort of a crystalline block at the top of the DNA, saying that it's called junk DNA. That they say that there's all this other stuff that sits at the top of the DNA chain. And this goes into, the theory gets very, very deep, because it goes into a lot of Zachariah Sitchin's work and goes into the ancient times in the Bible when supposedly human beings used to be able to live.
All right, let's see if I got it straight. Then this supposed so-called junk DNA you take or someone takes to be actually the formation of a new strand of DNA, something, a work in progress, so to speak.
Yeah, an expansion of the DNA helix that will lead to a mutation, a positive ascension mutation of humanity to I think the next level. And it's Edgar Cayce called it the infusement of the Christ consciousness. There are intimations in the prophecy and timeline of the Great Pyramid of Giza that talk about the Christ consciousness returning in the air, literally an atmospheric seeping, if you will, that is subtly changing the DNA of the planet in general, that would then become physical, began to physically manifest beginning in actually 1985, and bring on possibly a whole new generation of these new kids that are coming in, the 14th generation of America, the millennium generation, that are going to have a great deal to do with many of the of the changes in consciousness that are about ready to happen, not just in the United States. The United States, I think, is going to lead a lot of it. You know, being my theory of the U.S., the United States, and Canada being very much the new kingdom of heaven, but having to do with this this whole evolution of consciousness, which I think, you know, 500 years or so from now is not going to be what is going to be looked back upon as the most remarkable aspect of the 20th and the early part of the 21st century is not going to be so much the technological achievements. It's going to be the spiritual advancements of people from many religions beginning to come together and finding the commonality and the common bond between their religions and their knowledge of the power of the Creator and the power of the Father and the power of the Source.
Well, a lot of people who are in the NASDAQ are getting religion now. Now, that goes to one of your predictions too, doesn't it? You made several predictions about the stock market going way back when. What were they?
Well, the big thing was is that you know, talking about, and once again, this is going
Sean,
back.
Sean, you're going to have to stay a little away from that phone.
Okay, this is going back about 2 years or so ago, talking specifically about how the NASDAQ starts to quack and the Dow turns to wow. But that my prediction originally was that you would see a crash in October directly before the elections. The date I gave was the 19th of October, and the actual crash occurred on the 12th, that you'd begin to see a selling off of the stock market beginning right after Labor Day in September. And this goes all the way through 2000 of exact predictions of the beginning of the downward slide of the market in February.
Yeah, but right now it's like my little commercial sounder. It's like the trash can's falling down the stairs, some lady called it, and the market is just continuing to fall down the stairs. It's awful. I mean, the NASDAQ is down over half. The Dow is just getting whacked. I mean, where do we go from here? What do you see for the market ahead?
Well, this is kind of the stuff that I say for the newsletter because it's got charts and, I mean, I can tell you that the NASDAQ will continue to slide and there are two potential scenarios that are actually coming out of the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones. With the NASDAQ, and this is going to be the real panic point, and this is one of the things that, in the predictions issue of the newsletter, I put the graphs in there of the Elliott wave charts that we ran because we ran the mathematics on both of the charts on the NASDAQ chart and also on the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Yes.
That the seller is going to be 1789. So you're looking at over the next 6 weeks, a continued drop in the NASDAQ.
Down to 1789?
Down to 1789. That's the bottom of the seller. Now, two things are going to occur. If the NAS goes to 1789 and begins to how can we say, sort of zigzag back upwards. Even if it goes sideways for a while, right about then, we'll be okay. And the NASDAQ will continue to rise. I'm not sure what exactly makes it go up, but I think first quarter earnings actually come out. They're not as bad as everyone expects. There's a lot of new advancements in broadband, in a whole new series of mathematical algorithms that are about ready to be introduced. There's a whole chunk of military technology that is coming from our little buddies out at Area 51, if you get my drift, that is that there are a series of front companies. And these front companies acting as literally public sector downloads for Area 51, companies like Connection Technologies, companies like Omnigon, they have literally come up with what I believe an alien form of mathematics that will increase broadband transmission speeds.
I'm laughing because what you're saying about front companies is what Philip Corso said happened to all the Roswell stuff, that was introduced through front companies. Same deal.
This is exactly what's happening now, and everything that's been developed out at 51, everything from what they call quantum computing to DNA computers to advancements in nanotechnology, the biggest one being a new form of mathematical algorithms that will increase broadband speeds by about 10,000 times over current phone lines. And this is not science fiction. I mean, I have, for example, Omnigon. I got a prospectus from them, and this is what they claim in their prospectus, that they're actually able to do with this new technology they're about to introduce.
And well, I thought on POTS lines there was a limit, a wall that you hit that you can't go past, and it's not that far away. In other words, we're almost there at about 50K, you know, about 50,000 kilobytes, you're done.
Well, this is with the current technology and with the current algorithms and the current math they're using now. And as far as I understand it, from what I've read from these prospectuses, and once again, these companies read like who's of the spook world. I mean, the woman I spoke to was the was who's the communications director for the company, was the overseas director for the CIA for 28 years. And, you know, her husband worked at Area 51, well, National Reconnaissance Office, ONI, for about 16 years or so. So this is like a who's who of the spook world that is doing this, you know, these downloads into our technology sectors.
If that were to happen, it would change the world.
But that's the, you know, that's what they're shooting for, is to be able to take this this new technology, and this is going to be the hope of the economy for the United States and for the NASDAQ and for technology in general. Because what you're looking at is you've got a basically potential customer base of about 6 billion people, obviously.
Sure.
And then you've got all this stuff that's available on the internet. I mean, you know, however much is out there in terms of products, goods, and services.
Well, look at this. If what you just described came true, even by 20%, Sean, you would have television, broadcast television would cease to exist for all practical purposes, because you could deliver high-resolution video and audio to somebody's computer screen.
That's right.
That would fill the entire screen and would be better resolution than you can get from satellite or anything else right over your phone line. That's to give people some idea of how it would change.
That's absolutely correct. And you would also then have a DVD player that would then directly connect into it, and of course you could then download movies and do whatever it is you wanted that way. Before I go into the rest of the NASDAQ, let me just give you a couple of I think sort of interesting predictions for what's ahead.
Sure.
As far as a lot of the technology goes, the biggest thing that we're going to have to watch out for is that terrorists are about to go high tech. Osama bin Laden has actually been bragging in the press about how his Islamic Jihad is going to attack the computer systems of the United States. And there's going to be a new supercomputer virus that is going to be released in the world's computer infrastructure, and actually use a form of artificial intelligence which will study the host environment and then alter the virus will actually alter itself based on the unique structure of the system that they're infecting. And
wonderful.
America,
great. Just what we need.
Well, all these countries will be crippled, and I want you to remember this term because you're going to hear a lot about it. They're called polymorphic viruses, and they're going to alter code to evade detection and wreak a huge amount of damage. And these PVs, as they'll be called, will cause billions of dollars worth of damage in lost data. They'll also be used to excuse and empower a consortium of internet police, possibly out of the United Nations. So we need to watch for copyright infringement, trademark violations, and other sins against intellectual property.
And all of this will no doubt begin as some little clerk in a government office in some obscure place opens a piece of email and says, "I love you."
Yes. Or download Sarah Michelle Gellar now.
That's right.
But this is going to be, it's going to have a lot to do with, the internet police that are going to be protecting primarily intellectual properties. Of course, China is the largest violator of most of this. Also, I mean, the internet is going to go interplanetary, even intergalactic. Back in April of 2000, NASA demonstrated that it could actually use standard internet protocols to communicate with orbiting spacecraft, just like any other node on the internet. So engineers over at NASA Goddard Space Flight Test successfully contacted UOSAT-12 spacecraft through a ground station in Surrey, England, using internet, what they call ping packets. The project is actually called Operating Missions as Nodes on the Internet, which is OMNI, is actually the abbreviation for it. And it was the first time that a spacecraft has ever been actually accessed through an Internet address. So one of the big things that we're going to see is we'll actually see Internet websites as domain names, .earth, .jupiter, .moon, .mars.
Oh, really?
So that'll be kind of interesting.
I've got a headline here from Stockholm. It's Reuters News. Says an unidentified computer hacker has got hold of top-secret U.S. computer system codes for guiding spaceships, rockets, and satellites, according to a lawyer in Sweden.
Hmm.
So they've got the... they've got the base code for operating our satellites and rockets.
All I can see is the Swedish chef from the Muppet Show behind a computer going, "Yeah, I'm going to crash the satellite." No, here it comes down on your head.
Yeah, unfortunately, maybe not so funny. That's exactly the kind of thing they probably would do with it, don't you think?
Well, quite possibly. I mean, as I said, this is going to be the internet terrorism and the terrorism of the next decade is going to be computer driven, And
maybe mirror come down a little earlier.
It might. Now I'm simultaneously excited and pretty much terrified by a lot of the developments that have happened in biological sciences. And
yes.
A lot of these probably won't happen in 2001. I mean, we probably by the year 2002, most likely we'll see, you know, probably the Ray aliens will try to clone that French race car driver that leads that bizarre cult.
Do you hear the interview I did on that?
No, I didn't.
I interviewed the president of the religion here in America about the cloning that they're going to do.
Was that Helen Marie Parent, I think it was?
No accent here. Head of the American religion. Now, he said that not only are they contemplating cloning, they're contemplating downloading. In other words, you produce a clone, another Sean David, and then when Sean David's bod begins to give out, you take the contents of Sean David's brain you download it into the new little Sean David, who now essentially gets erased, replaced by the older, failing Sean David, and you have what?
Well, downloading my brain would only take probably about 3 megs. So.
No, but what I mean is you've got you. In a brand new body, and
well,
so essentially you'll live forever.
That's the soul catcher technology that's coming out of England.
That's what they're talking about. All right, hold on.
Taking your calls from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now, here again is Art.
Good morning. Sean David Morton is here, and we're doing a bit of predicting. That's what Sean does. We'll get right back to it in a moment. Stay right where you are. Headed back now to Sean David Morton. By the way, we're going to ask Sean about it. You know, whatever it is, ginger, whatever they want to call it, it. Maybe a personal transportation device. I'll tell you all something right now. For about a month, I've been sitting on something that my wife and I discovered regarding a personal transportation device. And I can't tell you about it yet. And it's nothing as exotic as the sky car, believe me, but it is definitely something you're going to love. When we can tell you about it, we will. We're sitting on a interesting piece of a technology that we've discovered. So that'll be coming up. Anyway, we'll ask Sean about it. He was telling us about some biological type things. Sean?
We're getting back into and I guess we'll talk about it later on in the show. It's the biggest hype for something that, well, it'll be interesting, let's put it that way, but nothing that'll revolutionize humanity as you're talking about. Like I said, what I wanted to go through here is just, this is just primarily my research and my feelings on where the trends are going to go, and then get into what I'm actually seeing psychically as far as the rest of the world. But, you know, we obviously have a lot of time tonight. And also, the new format of the show is great. I actually feel as though we get a chance to actually have a conversation now.
That's right. That's what I bargained for.
Yeah, I guess you dropped the floating breaks at like the 20s and 40s, eh?
Well, I float them where I want them, and they're shorter.
Right. Oh, well, it's a lot nicer. So here it is. I'm sort of simultaneously excited and really terrified by a lot of the developments in biological sciences. And as I was saying, that these probably won't happen in 2001, but we're literally facing what I think is like that Fox television show Dark Angel, kind of a dark angel reality that's not that far away. And I do believe that genetic engineering has been in operation in the military for at least the past 10 years, probably as far back as evidence that I've seen points to various types of genetic engineering that can crossbreed various species as far back as 1978. But it's, for example, David Smith, who's the vice president of technology for futures, talks about the age of bio, and that computing power will surpass human brain power by 2040. And I think that it's more like 2010, because these secret sections of the military and the shadow government have had DNA-based computers now for about 10 years, and these are just now in the process of being downloaded into the public sector. Also, nanotechnology researchers are plotting how to harness the power of the Internet. Because
All right, before you go too much further, let me read you this. I hold on to all this stuff. I don't know why. This is from the New Scientist. It's entitled, "A New Artificial Intelligence Program Could Be Smart Enough to Learn Language the Way We Do." And they're calling it HAL. A computerized toddler called HAL is the first AI program to understand everyday language. Now, they're saying it's equivalent to the linguistic abilities of a five-year-old.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that's now.
Wow. Well, it's as I said, I my prediction has been that by about 2000, I'd say as early as 2005, but between 2007, I mean, you'll be able to go to the store and pay about $3,500 or so for a computer that will basically be able to almost about 80% worth rival the human brain.
I wonder how many computers between now and then I'm going to have to buy.
Probably a lot. It depends on if you have Apples or IBMs, I suppose. But it's and nanotech is really going to be where a lot of this is going to be about. I mean, currently in nanotechnology, they can actually get sort of lumps of nanotech to take on rudimentary shapes and sizes. You know, you can yell at this thing and it'll become like an ashtray or a ball or a sphere or
You're
a square.
You're kidding. You can yell at it?
Yeah. You can actually, it's voice commanded. And that's one of the things about the nanotechnology that they're going to start, once it gets small enough, you can actually put this stuff into paint, where you paint your car and you run an electrical pulse through the car, it'll change the color of your car. They'll have...
that'll help the police. Oh, I'll tell you.
But they're also, they're looking at stuff that where you can actually... they're talking now about, there's a group that's searching for volunteers to download a screensaver on their computers that would automatically route unused central processing unit time into this project's central processor. And the group says that this Dream Team group talks about actually using all of this extra processing time to help them mold molecules that are needed to build into a nanocomputer that's only a few thousands of an atom's thick. Mm. Also, they'll be able to use a type of paint that they'll be able to paint up on a whiteboard and actually use as a display screen. It's sort of it's a download of what the NSA is calling spy dust. And it's just some of the remarkable things that are out there. And this leads into sort of the ginger thing again, but a whole new thing that was introduced on the Cadillacs last year is what they call automotive telematics, which is dashboard technology that combines the heads-up transparent screen display, which pops up on your windshield, with voice recognition, audio, hands-free cell phone, navigation, internet connectivity, and email in cars. And, you know, I mean, all we used to have to worry about was that blonde doing 90 talking on the phone doing her makeup. And, now we've got to worry that, you know, some geek is going to be downloading pictures of Sarah Michelle Gellar in his car.
That'll help the police, too.
Yeah. And but this is going to be the big thing. This is going to be Detroit's big new move, is to be able to basically be mobile internet service providers and be able to clip you for anywhere from $50 to $150 a month so you can have all this stuff in your car. And of course, the dashboard PCs were installed in the Cadillacs last year, and it is one of the most complex investment-intensive growth areas. But it seems to be easy to sell in a boardroom, and this is the kind of part that sort of pisses me off. I mean, the sad part is they won't mass produce a car which runs on water or hydrogen or super clean fuel cells.
No.
Yeah, but computer geeks can now download pictures in their cars. So, I mean,
I'm still stuck on a little blob of nanotechnology that you can yell at ashtray
and become different.
Pin with ink. You know, I mean, whatever you need at the moment, that would be incredible. You really think that's going to happen?
Like the guy in Terminator. That's the technology as they've developed it. That's the edge of the technology now. So it's not a question of if they'll develop it. It's what they have now. That this is a blob of nanotech that you can actually will recognize a voice command to take on a various shape.
That's excellent.
So just like the guy in Terminator that could form, he can form rudimentary objects, knives, clubs, stabbing tools, from Terminator.
Yeah, let me yell at my little blob here. Britney Spears! That probably is where we're headed.
All right, so this is all leading us to the NASDAQ, because I wanted to just talk about, these are some of the the technological things. The biggest things that are going to tank in the next year are going to be things like application service providers. I mean, those are just going to go right down the tubes. 60% of what they call ASPs are going to fail within the next year.
Wow.
There's also going to be a heavy dose of layoffs in the e-commerce sector. It's actually interesting because they've got all these young kids that are just getting ready to come up, the, you know, the sort of Generation Y, as they're called. And but they don't have any senior managers because we've got this glut now of kind of middle-aged people or people right at the edge of the baby boom that are getting ready to retire. So senior managers, you know, who are now retiring, there's about 76 million baby boomers that are right at the end of their formal careers, and there are only about 44 million Gen X gang out there to replace them. So, I mean, this is going to be the big crunch in the technology sector is going to have a lot to do with this. So what does this all have to do with the NASDAQ?
A lot.
Talking about what the NASDAQ is going to be, that there's two scenarios for the NAS right now. And and as I said, for anybody that orders the newsletter tonight, they'll get the predictions.
Let me stop you there. I've got I get these messages during the show, fast blast messages, from Rand, R-A-N-D, in Las Vegas. Tell John his website will not allow us to subscribe to his newsletter, and can he give us the information over the air? You have any knowledge of that? Are you having trouble?
How strange. Well, it's actually, well, you're supposed to be able to click on a window, and it should take you to a shopping cart that would
it's overroded.
That's quite possible. We've opened up the website to unlimited bandwidth for this evening, but we also have operators standing by. There's a whole team of people that are standing by just for tonight's program.
All right, so if you want the newsletter, obviously, you've got a phone number,
if
right?
People want to call the toll-free number, which is 888-452-7999.
Have you opened it up to unlimited operators?
Yes. Well, we've got about 20 people standing by getting ready to take the calls.
All right,
888-452-7999. And you can also check out the website at, hopefully, I don't know if it's working or not, but you can get the information actually off the website at www.delphiassociates, that's one word, D-E-L-T-H-I, associates, A-S-S-O-C-I-A-T-E-S, .org. And by the way, newsletter subscriptions, we have, it's $60 for 12 issues for 1 year. We also have an honored elder senior rate, which is $45. And we are an IRS-recognized...
How old do you have to be for that?
65.
In my town, they give me some discounts now, and I'm 55.
Well, then I'll give you the discount.
And listen, if you couldn't get all that written down, we've got the link to Delphi Associates, and your website is, I can report to you, up. I just now went to it.
Okay, DelphiAssociates.org, 888-452-7999. And we also, you know, it's all tax deductible as well. We're an IRS recognized religious educational organization.
Are you?
We don't turn anybody away. So we actually have a very large. And I said this on your show before that we give the newsletter for free to people that are indigent, handicapped, incarcerated. So you know, we're not trying to clip anybody for the cashier.
You're gonna get. Do you know how many letters I get from people in the joint?
And I have a lot of them as subscribers to the newsletter, and it's a, you know, it's a pleasure for me to do it. I don't judge these people. I figure if there's anything that I can do, you know, to help make their lives better so that when they get out, you know, they become better people and evolve while they're in there, that's great with me. So but obviously it is the suggested donations for the newsletter that make things happen. So it's $60 for a regular donation, $45 for the seniors. And if you want to send us a snail mail, it's PRI, which is the Prophecy Research Institute, and you can make your checks payable to PRI at 2207 Hermosa Avenue. That's H-E-R-M-O-S-A, means beautiful in Spanish. And we're in Hermosa Beach, H-E-R-M-O-S-A Beach, California, 90254. So,
all right, and the phone number again is 888-452-7999.
All right. And actually, if the people order now, we got two newsletters, one right on top of the other. So they'll get the newsletter called Prometheus Unbound, which is all the predictions for the year. It's got the charts for the NASDAQ and the Dow Jones Industrial.
Okay.
And all the predictions. And they'll also get Year of the Snake right after that, because I just got finished with the Year of the Snake newsletter, which is the March issue. So they'll get the February issue right away, and then they'll get the March issue right on top of that. if they order tonight at the same time. So, and thank you for letting me plug the newsletter. I do appreciate it. So here's the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is, and I'll give you two scenarios for what's going to happen now. If the NASDAQ goes below 1789, that's the seller for the NASDAQ right now. That's the what we call the barrier resistance line at the bottom.
Right.
Let me give you the pessimistic prediction. The pessimistic prediction is that if the NASDAQ drops below 1789 and actually continues downward to about 1700, we're screwed. It's basically going to be the beginning of the Silicon Valley depression.
I can't believe it could, not with the technology that you just talked about that's on the way. It just can't tank that far.
Well,
I don't think I believe that.
If it does, that's the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that if the NASDAQ goes down to 1700, and this is once again, we're in a 6 week from now through March to the beginning of April, and I see the actual bottom of the NASDAQ coming about 1789, about the 15th of April or so. So you're going to see a downward slide of the NASDAQ. You're then going to, and this is the worst case scenario.
All right, well then let's hope it's not
doomsday.
Give me the best case.
The best case scenario for this is going to be the NASDAQ will bounce off the barrier resistance line of 1789. And if it goes to 1789 and then starts to go sideways, in other words, through April and May,
right?
The NASDAQ will recover this year, and I do believe that by October of this year, you will actually see the NASDAQ up, and I will make a conservative estimate. My conservative estimate is you will see the NASDAQ at about 3,600, but a high for this year of back up to 4,100 or so by the end of this year. And that'll be that's the top. It'll reach the top of 4,100, and then it'll play back from that. The Dow Jones is actually going to do a lot better. And there's also two scenarios for the Dow Jones Industrial as well. If we see, and once again, I'll take this directly out of the, I'll find this in the newsletter here, and I'll just read you exactly what I picked up out of the newsletter here as far
Fair
as
enough.
The...
I like public predictions.
Okay, here we go. So here it is. I just read this one. As of February 19th, which is when the prediction was made and printed in the newsletter, 2001, the NASDAQ was at 2346. Of course, it's down to, I don't know what it's at today, 22-something. And the Dow Jones was at 10,715. So here we go. The NASDAQ will continue to a downward trend in the next 6 weeks through late March to early April. Mm. The bottom of this projected wave will be around April 5th to the 17th, 2001, at 1789.69. At this point, one of two things will happen. I already explained that one.
The Dow Jones.
The floor of the seller. All right, so here we go. Let me give you the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's a lot like the heartbeat of the nation. And when it has a heart attack, I literally feel it. And I focused a lot more on the Dow Jones than I have the NASDAQ because I thought that, you know, that most people would see that the NASDAQ, you know, that Yahoo just was not worth as much as Texaco. And it was just sort of, you know, billions of puffs of hot air. But as I said, I think the Dow will turn to wow in the next few months and that old economy industries, specifically defense and financial stocks, should return it to the lofty territory of the upper half of about of the 11,000 range.
Well, then what you're saying is you think a lot of the money that's gone to the sidelines and has decided to become safe for a while, and I don't blame it, probably sitting in people's money markets funds, is going to now, there's going to be building confidence in the old economy, and the money's going to go back into the Dow.
Right, and that this is going to be, and here's the two scenarios for the Dow right now. If the Dow Jones, and this is by the end of this year, if the Dow Jones comes back to 12,000, which I expect it to be, and actually I made a prediction, I think it was the show with Ian or the show with Mike a while back, that I saw the Dow actually recovering and rising up to 20% above what it was at its high in October of 2000.
That'd be nice.
But if there's two scenarios, I'll give you the worst case scenario again. The worst case scenario being is that if the Dow goes to 12,000 and doesn't stick, in other words, if it continues to go down and the Dow goes back down, in other words, if it hits the 12,000 line and recesses back down to about 11,300, just get the hell out because that means that we're on a long, low, bumpy ride and that the economy will not stabilize for at least till the end of about 2002. That's the worst case scenario. Mm. A lot of this is going to have to do with Bush, and we'll get into the real specifics about what's going to happen with him in about the next 3 years.
Yeah, but by the way, you say he's only going to be a 3-year president.
Yes.
How come?
He's well, we'll get into that. Let me finish the Dow, and we'll talk
all right.
about that.
All right.
But it's the economy will recover at the top of the next wave. Let me. I'll just read you what it says. If this year the Dow Jones Industrial goes above 12,000 and sticks at around 11,600 or above, then the economy will recover at the top of the next wave and will take us through March of 2002, with the high of next year in 2002 being 13,052. And this is the optimistic projection would be that we would see the Dow Jones at 12,000. My optimistic projection would be May or June. More realistically, we would see the Dow back up around the 12,000 range, probably as late as September, October. However, if the Dow Jones hits 12,000 and does not stick, or keeps going, or keeps going up, but backslides down below 11,300,
right,
then we're in big trouble, and this will mean that we're headed not just for a recession, but a depression, and the slide will not end for another 2 years. And there are three bottom targets for this rolling tsunami of 9,287, 8,418, or 7,823. And these are the best, medium, and worst case scenarios on this. So I'm pretty optimistic. I think that what will happen is that I think George Bush is going to be a lot smarter than people give him credit for, and that the whole country is kind of holding its breath this year. And by the beginning of next year, he's going to turn his attention much more towards domestic policy. And I think people are going to realize that, or they're going to assume anyway, that he's sort of on the right track. And I do get my predictions for his entire presidency in here, which is probably the next thing we might want to talk about, if you want to talk about his 3-year presidency.
Well, I do. I think I do, depending on on how you think it's going to terminate. Is it going to terminate in a way that if you were to predict it, let's put it this way, the Secret Service would come knock on my door?
I don't know. Maybe we should
talk about that off the air.
We can also. I mean, I made the prediction as far back as 98 again when I said that I said quite specifically on your show that George W. Bush will be the next president of the United States, but that he does not survive his term.
All right, hold it right there. All right, Sean David Martin is my guest. He makes predictions, and he's doing that tonight. We'll find out about the Bush presidency. Probably coming up in a moment. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. How you doing, everybody? Let me tell you a little story, just a quick story in case you missed it previously. We've done a lot of prediction shows over the years on this program, and trust me when I tell you, it doesn't matter. If somebody predicts a bad ending for a president, even though it's a prediction from a psychic, somebody who sees future events, it doesn't matter because a bunch of people in obscure places will call the Secret Service and say, oh my God, they said the following is going to happen to the president. Well, the Secret Service has no choice. They investigate. They call the network. They find out where I am. They come and they knock on my door, and two guys with suits and bulges come in, and they sit down and they have a talk with me. And I explain to them what it's all about. I say, look, it's just a prediction. And they don't even smile. They don't have much of a sense of humor. They make notes. They say thank you very much, and they leave. So I don't do that anymore. And it happens just that fast. All right, now, here to talk about the Bush presidency, Sean David Morton. Sean.
All right, here we go. When I was on the show on December 29th with Ian, he actually dug out these sound bites and played them, but I will quote them again. On October 1st of 1998, you and I were on the radio together, and let me quote the first one where I said, quote, Al Gore will be the Democratic nominee, and he will choose as his vice presidential running mate either Dianne Feinstein or Lieberman, a Democrat from Connecticut. This was 2 years before the election.
Incredible.
Also on that same program, I will also quote it, and Ian played the sound clips when I was on the 29th of December. The thing is here, Art, I'm looking at the year 2000. Politically speaking, if the election is held in 2000, the Republican candidate will be George W. Bush, and there are two possible futures going on here. George W. Bush, I believe, dies in office as president. However, the blur here is, and I say this in all honesty, when I'm doing my meditations, Art, I'm not sure there is even an election in the year 2000. Now, that was the exact quote from October 1st, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there was an election, but it was held, the immensely confusing circumstances that occurred,
mm-hmm.
That Gore was declared president-elect by all the news networks, and then that was put back in the undecided category.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what we've got. Now that my prediction of George W. Bush, and I wrote a number of articles about the pattern that we're repeating. I stuck to my guns through the entire 2 years saying, look, this guy's going to be the next president of the United States. You guys better get used to it. And let's talk about these, what I see as being his next 3 years in office. There is, and I hope we can talk about this. I mean, in political history, there are two very interesting things that happen to American presidents that is known as the zero curse, which is obviously pretty well known. Some people call it the curse of Chief Tecumseh, or the curse of Chief Degegidawiya, which is kind of an American way of covering up the fact that there is a rather unique conjunction of the planets Jupiter and Saturn that cut directly across the astrological chart of the leader of the United States approximately over 20 years. And the only president that's ever beaten the zero curse has been Ronald Reagan. And the reason Reagan beat it was because this conjunction usually, in the history of this nation, the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction has always occurred in an Earth sign, Taurus, Virgo, or Capricorn, except in 1980 when it actually occurred in an air sign. It occurred in Libra, which successfully trined Reagan's chart. He had a lot of Aquarius in his chart, which not only allowed him to survive the assassination attempt by John Hinckley, but to come out the other side of it as an even more popular president than he was before. And looking at George Bush's chart, he's got like the worst astrological chart that I've seen in a leader in 246 years. And I pray, and I also, and this is the responsibility of everybody out there, is that I pray that I am wrong about these things. And whether you like the man or don't like the man, it is the responsibility of every American out there to pray for our leaders, to pray for the president, and obviously to pray for his health and for his success. So this is in no way trying to create this reality. This is just trying in a very honest manner to show what I see and to put it out there to people. I mean, I wish that I could get a meeting with George Bush. I mean, it'll probably never happen.
Improbable. So cutting through all of this, your prediction is?
Well, we could describe his years in office, but, I mean, there's two ways this ends up. And this is the disagreement that I've had with my team. When I turn this over to Stacey Dean, who's my astrologer, she sees health problems that he has in the year 2003. And that this has to do with his heart, it has to do with his stomach, it has to do with his digestive system. My prediction, I don't think we should talk about actually.
All right, prediction then would get me a visit, right?
Well, the best way for people if they want the prediction and they want the exact details of the next
get your meeting, newsletter, right?
Get the newsletter.
All right, but that issue aside, you would say that, right? Or would you not? I mean, we're being as specific as we can be here. Your prediction would get me a visit that I don't want, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Get you a visit.
Done.
From guys in
then I understand exactly what you're saying.
With no sense of humor.
Yeah. Okay.
Who would come in and say, you can't be saying this kind of stuff on the radio.
Yep, I've got it. All right.
And it has a lot to do with the violent times we're entering into and wars in the Middle East. And but, I mean, as far as his presidency goes, his first year is going to be war. I mean, foreign affairs, Mexico, Canada, Eastern Europe. We're looking at Desert Storm 2. You know, this massive, you know, this is a Captain Obvious prediction, but, you know, the massive trouble that we're about ready to get into in the Middle East, now that Ariel Sharon has become the Prime Minister of Israel, and how that's now galvanizing all of the various Islamic states to sort of band together into this Islamic jihad that I've been talking about since 1994, that I think will eventually be led by a leader who will be called Jamal, actually, by the West, which means the beautiful one, but he's an Iranian cleric who kind of presents himself as a religious and military leader, and kind of combines this jihad together that winds up in a major war and some real devastation in Jerusalem by about 2006. So this is the building phases of this. But everybody's real unsure. The whole country sort of holds its breath for the first year. He deals with all these foreign affairs. He meets with foreign leaders. There's also going to be betrayal in his cabinet. This is the biggest thing that I see. When his father, George Bush, got in and is sort of advising him, and we've got Dick Cheney, we've got all the old warlords that came from the Bush administration, from the first Bush administration, Cheney, Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, you know, all of these advisors he has around him, they sort of expected him to be kind of an I, Claudius sort of idiot prince emperor where they could actually rule the country behind its back, and it's not going to happen that way. He's a lot smarter than people give him credit for, and I see that there is going to be by the end of this year, you're going to see a lot of heads rolling and a lot of people being fired out of his administration, possibly even falling into the category of a real falling out with his father on this, because I see sort of a Knight of the Long Knives where he is politically and really personally betrayed by people within his administration who are doing a lot of things behind his back. And you know, George Bush's his patriotism is not in question at all. I mean, he literally feels a deep pride for this country and all of its institutions. But he also firmly believes that the hand of God played a role in his being chosen, and that he was anointed president by the personal hand of Jesus Christ Almighty. And he truly believes that he has a mission and believes that his presidency will be some kind of holy crusade. And how that gets him into trouble, and make no mistake about this, that the true powers behind the throne will quickly, correct the king who believes that he rules by divine right and doesn't really do what he's told. The second year he's going to be in office, he's going to be very slick. There's going to be obviously a lot of personal guffaws, a lot of snafus with his administration. He learns how to play the spin game. He hires the best spin experts, the people to handle him. He becomes much smoother at the press conferences. And he actually becomes an immensely popular American president. I mean, his approval rating, as far as the economy, as far as foreign affairs is going to go, is literally going to zoom up to the magical 73%.
Assuming that your predictions on the economy go the positive direction.
Correct, yeah. Well, I also think that, I mean, the economy was purposely manipulated in 2000, and I've said this over and over and over again, that the oil structures were manipulated, and of course Y2K, whether or not, I mean, the effect of Y2K is that even though it sort of turned out to be a bust, we still spent something like $350 billion fixing it, which is like $365 for every man, woman, and child in the United States.
Well, my view of the whole thing was that those who did preparation for Y2K are probably well served by holding on to their stuff, because get ready for the weather, folks.
It's going to be the weather and the earthquakes and everything that's about to happen. But economically, Greenspan and Tony Blair and Europe pumped billions of dollars into the world economy, basically had to have all this free floating cash just in case there was a run on the banks in regards to Y2K. And it didn't happen,
right?
This run on the banks. So what they had to do was they had to jack up the interest rates so they could get all that money back. And at the same time, so we've got the cost of Y2K, which were about $1 trillion worldwide. We've got all this free floating money in all the banks just in case there were a run on the banks, which they had to get back, which means the interest rates had to go up. We had a manipulation of the oil markets where George Bush Sr. in February of 2000 went over and had a nice little conversation with his best buddy, the Emir of Kuwait, and asked him to cut oil supplies by 30%, which he did. Mm. And at the same time, you had a massive flood in Venezuela, which killed 30,000 people and destroyed the infrastructure, which is one of our main oil-producing countries.
That's right.
But you had a series of manipulations of the oil markets, the stock markets, and the money markets to purposely implode the economy in an election year. Now, you have to remember, too, that predicting a crash of the stock market right before an election, you know, for anybody else that would predict that would be, I guess you would call prediction suicide.
You really think they did that? I mean, that's such a dark...
There has never been, ever, a crash in the U.S. market before a presidential election in U.S. history, with the exception of this one. And yes, are they capable of it? Yes. Do I think they did it? Yes. And the whole thing, I think, was geared to put George W. Bush in office. Now, whether or not they had the power to single-handedly wreck the economy, certainly they didn't do anything to the, you know, the NASDAQ sort of fell on its own because of the slowing down of the technology sector.
I know, but manipulate oil and you manipulate everything.
The rest of it, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So his second year in office, he's going to be immensely successful because he's going to turn all of his energy onto domestic issues, and he's going to have the spin machine working. The focus is going to basically turn away from wars and foreign affairs. It's going to be all about domestic issues, education, a lot of tax cuts. The biggest thing this year is after a huge fight with the Democrats is that he's going to put through a major tax cut that will be more generous than I think is what's on the table now. An elimination of certain inheritance taxes, an elimination of...
Now, where is he going to get the political power to do this? In other words, he's already talking about a tax cut twice the size that the Democrats want. How is he going to get one even bigger than he wants now, which the Democrats already consider overgenerous anyway?
It's going to happen.
He's going to get that kind of political clout, huh?
It's one of those predictions that it's just he's going to be able to ram it through and he'll succeed. And strangely enough, one of his allies in the Senate, as weird as this sounds, he's becoming very good friends with Ted Kennedy, who is going to help him out. Ted Kennedy has been having a lot of dinners at the White House with Bush, has opposed him on things so far, like the Ashcroft nomination. But it'll be very interesting to see. It'll be a big political victory for him. And of course, then next year, when we get out of the whole war phase and what's going to go on with Desert Storm 2 and the actions in the Middle East, the education, infrastructure rebuilding, he's going to get a lot of high marks from governors for re-empowering the states.
Is the old Bush-Cheney crowd, you just said Desert Storm 2.
Yes.
Now, we just saw him jump, right away on Iraq. So you see Iraq doing what to provoke us into a second Desert Storm?
What did they provoke us? How did they provoke us this time?
Well, I mean, radar installations, that sort of thing. Is, I guess, what provoked us into.
Well, actually, the biggest thing was is that the Chinese are in Iraq, and the Chinese are there with weapons technology that they either stole or were given by the Clinton administration, or bought from the Israelis, or were traded by the Russians. And the Red Chinese are now building anti-aircraft missile installations in Iraq. And that's the big news about this was that the thing that triggered the airstrikes was the Chinese actually building these anti-aircraft, anti-missile, ways to shoot down our pilots.
So bottom line, you think we're going to have another war with Iraq, right?
Yes.
And this war will finish what was not finished the first time?
The only thing I can see is that, I mean, if we take him out of power, this is the problem. If we take Saddam out of power and one of his crazy sons, Uday and Qassan get in, it removes the entire reason for the United States being in the Middle East. I mean, we need the guy. Number one, because he's a moderate Ba'ath Sunni that's basically keeping Iraq from going completely radical Shiite. Number two, if we remove Saddam as the threat, what excuse do we still have to be there?
Well, yeah, exactly right. We have had a policy of containment, almost like the old Cold War. Don't let him get too high, don't let him get too strong, but don't have him go away either. That's been our policy so far.
Yeah.
So then how would another war fit in there?
It's going to be, a lot of it's going to have to do, once again, with Israel. It has to do with, I mean, the things, and this all triggers into, what I see as far as the Middle East, because I see Ariel Sharon, and one of the things that I predicted back in the October newsletter was the Likud party and Ariel Sharon becoming elected prime minister of Israel, that this acts as a lightning rod for the combination of the Islamic Jihad, which does lead to the Nostradamian third Antichrist. Nostradamus named, Napoleon is the first Antichrist, Hitler is the second Antichrist, and this guy in a blue turban, the Persian prince, as he called him, that leads this kind of Islamic confederation.
So if there is another war, does Israel stay out of it or not?
No, they're in the thick of it. It's also it's going to have a lot to do. It's mostly has to do with the Palestinians, because the biggest thing Saddam was never going to get. Saddam doesn't need Israel for anything. I mean, I've been saying since '92. A friend of mine who was an advisor to Bush during the Gulf War, a former Iraqi fighter pilot. He told me years ago that Saddam had nuclear weapons, that he had four nuclear weapons, two of which actually worked. Didn't have ballistic missile systems or guidance for those weapons, but, you know, he could pretty much huck them on a Scud launcher and cause a lot of damage. And that if Desert Storm didn't stop in Kuwait, that the threat was that he had actually targeted Tel Aviv and Jeddah in Saudi Arabia with these two nuclear devices. Now it's common knowledge all over the internet. It's and all over the news. People are talking about these two atomic weapons that Saddam actually physically has.
Well, let us assume, for the sake of this discussion, he does have two atomic devices. If he were to use them against Israel, Iraq would cease to exist.
It'd be a
because Israel has lots of nuclear weapons.
It would be a smoking hole in the ground.
Buried in the desert, and they're ready to use them.
Yep.
And they would use them.
Well, and that's another reason for the strike as well, is that he was moving his Republican Guard towards the western borders of Iraq to supposedly back up Syria and Jordan. You know, and this was when it was getting hot about three months or so ago. But the biggest thing I see in regards to Israel and in regards to the Middle East is the is an imposition of an apartheid state in Israel, which basically just cordons off and sort of puts in, you know, what effectively is kind of a huge prison camp, about 110,000 Palestinians or so.
Oh, my.
And it looks like, and I talked about this months ago, before I even saw this happening, or before this started happening, I just saw that the end of the Oslo Peace Accords would happen. And this is when I was talking to Mike Siegel about this back in September, saying, look, Mike, the Oslo Peace Accords are ending after 7 years. This is going to be the trigger for huge trouble in the Middle East, that we're entering into a seven-year war period, which eventually winds up on some sneak attack on Israel in 2006. And that, you know, you're going to see nothing but this massive war. Then in October, I said, well, the biggest thing I see is the Likud party and Ariel Sharon being elected prime minister, which was a big surprise. Him galvanizing these people and then basically turning loose an apartheid policy, or he considers Jordan part of Palestine. So I see a forced march of people actually being driven out of Israel altogether. And of course, this is where it gets a little sticky, because the Palestinians are sort of they're the backbone of the Israeli economy. They're really the workforce. So if you keep 110,000 Palestinians from actually going to their jobs every day, it's going to have a direct economic impact on the Israelis.
Oh, yes.
And at the same time, are they going to partition Israel up the same way that they did, say, East Germany, where you had these freeways that sort of went through the East German corridor, where you've got these guard towers? Because what I'm seeing is the guard towers with freeways, with barbed wire along the freeways, these overpasses that go over entire Palestinian neighborhoods, and literally a South Africa-style apartheid state.
Well, the kind of war you're describing could be the end of everything, literally. It certainly could be. It could be the trigger. We all know what could happen there.
Well, that's always been, and
impossible.
There's a whole series, everything from...
Sean, we're at the top of the hour.
Okay, all right.
Hold it right there. Sean, David Morton is my guest. This is Coast to Coast AM, doing a lot of predicting tonight.
Jack jumps over the candlestick. He jumped so high up above, he landed in the cradle of love. Well, rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. Well, rock-a-bye, baby, in the treetop. When the wind blows.
Wanna take a ride? Well, call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
When the wind blows.
Well, what do you all think? Is the cradle rocking out there, folks? I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Sean David Morton, and we're into some pretty heavy stuff. It'll continue in a moment. And back into the storm of predictions we go with Sean David Morton. And by the way, let me do this for Sean. His phone number to order the newsletter is totally locked up. So, and it's been locked up for ever since we announced it. So,
oh boy.
I would say you don't have an endless number of operators. Or
we had about 20 people working, and I guess they're just
working,
taking credit card orders and going crazy.
They're working. So, the number to order the newsletter, if you would like to, folks, write it down. Do it tomorrow if you can't do it today. Is 888-452-7999. One more time. 888-452-7999.
I guess the website's locked up too. I hope you can at least hit the website and download the information. If not, go directly to the shopping cart and actually order things off the website as well. So I don't know if the shopping cart's locked up, but I know the website's open, right?
Well, it was. I'll check it again here in a minute. Okay. Somebody asked a really good question. Did Reagan beat the curse, or could it be he ended the curse?
No, because it's once again it has to do with this Jupiter Saturn conjunction that cuts across the U.S. chart every 20 years, and
so it's going to keep coming.
I think it was, and it's more severe this year because we had that huge alignment of planets all in Taurus last May. Obviously, the 5/5/2000 alignment.
Okay, I think I've got it. So he didn't end it, unfortunately. No. All right, listen, if we don't move ahead, we're never going to get to a lot of things I want to get to. And one of the things I want to get to is it.
Okay.
Ginger. Whatever it is.
Okay, have you seen, it's actually, there's sort of a demonstration of it, strangely enough. Have you seen the Hannibal Lecter movie?
Yeah, not yet.
Okay.
I've read the book.
In the movie Hannibal. Yeah, it's a great book.
Yes, oh yeah.
It's all these Hannibal jokes, but oh, never mind. In the movie Hannibal, there's a device that they actually use in Europe that is how can I describe it? It's a hand cart, and the hand cart has a series of rolling wheels on it that then lock up for them to take, heavy things, refrigerators, statues, works of art, upstairs.
Yes.
What happens is that you actually see in the movie, I don't think this wrecks it for anybody, but Hannibal ties a guy to one of these hand carts and sort of pushes him out a window.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's this actual cart that actually has these rolling wheels, and what it does is it has a base of four wheels, so that when it comes up onto the stair, it actually locks, and then the other wheel then spins around like a tank.
But that couldn't be it. Look at these CEOs. Look at these big people that are saying it'll revolutionize things. Communities will be built around it. Come on, that's not.
I think it's a motorized rascal that can basically climb stairs and jump curbs. I there's nothing as I see it as being anything revolutionary, and once again, I haven't remote viewed this. I've looked at the stuff on the patent website just like you have, but I have studied a lot of what these people have put together in the past, and it looks to me, I mean, they're not doing anything that doesn't have anything to do with like internal combustion or regular electric drive. If they were, then I could certainly see if it was like a hoverboard or something, like from Back to the Future. But I think it's just a huge amount of hype, especially with the...
So you don't think there's any anti-gravity involved in it, anything as exotic as that?
No. I think it's exactly like the device that you see in the movie Hannibal that moves things upstairs, and it will allow the handicapped, with either wheelchairs or with, motorized scooters or rascals or things for... the older sections of the population to actually, climb stairs using this device. And I think that's about it. I mean, it will allow you to jump curbs, and because it's got four wheels on it, so when you come up to a curb, it also stands up. There's like a platform, so it rides like a scooter, sort of. And, you hold on to the handlebars. I don't know how safe that is. but you can hold on to the handlebars of this, and then it goes to a curb or goes to a series of steps, and then the wheels actually lock and then roll and rotate to go up and down. And it's my personal opinion after studying this, and as I said, I haven't remote viewed it. It's just my journalistic research looking into it. I think that's all it is, and I think it's just a huge amount of hype for nothing. And I wish to God it was something like anti-gravity or a hoverboard or cold fusion or, you know, something incredible and amazing that would actually hold up to the hype, but I don't think it is.
Okay. Here's something that I want to talk about.
Yes, sir.
That is very important to me.
Okay.
As you know, I was very close to Father Malachi Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed prior to the alleged release of the third secret of Fatima, Father Malachi Martin and I discussed it, and there are things that I swore I would never speak of publicly about the third secret. But I can tell you this, and the Father said this, and that's about all you can say, is that if you can imagine the worst thing possible, it's actually worse than that. And so that's the only way you can really phrase it and keep a promise that I made to him. I do know a few things.
Even now that he's gone, you can't talk about it?
No, I can't. Not if a man's word means something. No, I can't. But what I'm getting at is here, supposedly the third secret was released. And, brother, it does not match up with what I know. What little I know. And I don't know at all. What little I was told by Father Martin, it doesn't even come close. I mean, what do you think?
I completely agree. The things that we know as researchers about the third secret of Fatima is that the original secret was only about a page long, maybe a page and a half at best, and the one that was released by the Vatican was well over, I think, about four pages or so. They tried to allude to the fact that it had to do with the May 13th assassination attempt against the Pope by the Bulgarian intelligence agent back in the 1980s, and
yes,
that doesn't make any sense either.
No, not particularly when you look back at some of the past Pope's reactions to the third secret. It doesn't make sense. No,
and it's why would Pope? Pope Pius the 23rd, I think it was, the great navigator, was that the in 1962, when he supposedly read it, what would make him fall down and weep if it was just an assassination of a pope coming up?
Exactly.
I have a great deal of experience with what we call BVMs or Blessed Virgin Mary sightings, because when I was a kid and I was living in Cairo, I took a semester off high school. My stepfather had a Lebanese business partner, which is why I went to Cairo in the first place. And took a semester off high school, which is when I went to the British International School there. And there were apparitions in Cairo that are actually repeating now. And a lot of people, and for some reason, these apparitions were every bit as good as the and as well documented as the Fatima apparitions back in 1918. And these are the ones that were at the Coptic Church, which is in Zaytun, which is a suburb of Cairo. And the Virgin Mary appeared and walked back and forth, would appear every night about 7 o'clock or so, and would walk back and forth on around this church. And it was photographed and filmed and witnessed by thousands of people. And this was between, this was around Christmas time of 1967 and 1968. These apparitions then reappeared in late 1974, once around Christmas of 1974 through the beginning of 1975, lasted for about 2 months. And we drove our bikes out there and sat and watched these apparitions walk back and forth across this church. They finally they had to cordon off the entire area. They started charging people admission, to get in because they were blocking the streets, and the apparitions eventually disappeared. And then I also had some experience with this because I was in 1990 when I was doing the UFO documentary. We actually went to Medjugorje in Yugoslavia, and we saw some of these amazing apparitions that were happening on Miracle Hill there. And oddly enough, I actually got to meet Stone Phillips, who is now the anchorman for ABC News, but was then sort of a roving correspondent, who was also covering the Medjugorje apparitions. And we saw everything from UFO activity to rose petals falling from the sky, the sun splitting in two and pulsing in the sky like a beating heart, We watched the Majigori children in states of ecstatic rapture. We literally held flames up to their eyes. Myself and our cameraman jumped on the outstretched arms of this about 100-pound 16-year-old girl, and she held us both, I mean, effortlessly off the ground. She's holding, you know, my cameraman was like 275, and I was about 180 or so, and she's holding us off the ground in this ecstatic state. So we saw amazing things. And then in Conyers, Georgia, for Strange Universe, we covered the Virgin Mary sightings that were occurring there. A lot of which were not really given, they were not really given the proper coverage by the press, because the woman who was doing the channeling of the Virgin Mary, her biggest warning was that the Virgin Mary was warning the United States of an invasion of America in the near future, well, not, maybe not near future, but that our greatest, that the last great war America would face would be against Red China, and that there would be a massive invasion of the United States by Red China. And these were part of her predictions about the warning against China and the last great punishment to the United States in an invasion of the U.S. And there's also, I mean, just to give you an idea of what's happening now, just outside of California City in California in the Mojave Desert, there are hundreds and sometimes thousands of people who gather on the 13th of each month to hear a woman named Margaret Valdez channel the Virgin Mary there. And the biggest thing, and this is the one thing that I think that Father Malachi may have actually said a couple of times, but has been the greatest lack, I think, in the Vatican. And every time the Virgin appeared to Sister Lucia, the one thing that she demanded for peace, and this goes all the way back to the original Fatima miracles, goes, and I'm not sure what's happening, because it's happening now in Assuat in Egypt, and the apparition started there on August 13th of 2000, it was the 17th of 2000, which was actually exactly 13 years after the Harmonic Convergence in 1987, over St. Mark's Coptic Church in Assuat, which is in Upper Egypt. It's about, it sits on the Nile, about 300 miles south of Cairo, and it was believed to be one of the locations that the Holy Family stopped in their flight from Israel. And the Blessed Virgin Mary is also sacred to Christians and Muslims. And the appearances have continued from August throughout the entire month of October and continue. The biggest thing that she asked was for the consecration of Russia to the Sacred Heart, to Mary's Sacred Heart, and for the Catholic Church to perform an active with all the various cardinals and bishops all around the world, all at the same time, mm-hmm. to consecrate Russia. And that if this would happen, that all of the woe and sorrow would come from the spiritual apostasy of Russia. And this, of course, from the Fatima sightings, you see the Fatima sightings, you had the Russian Revolution, which occurred, just a few months later. You had Russia, her talking about the ideas and the concepts that would come from Russia would be responsible for this massive Holocaust of millions murdered. And, of course, that prophecy has come to the fore as we've
So then really from the hand of man.
We've watched about, with the expansion of government in just this century between the Nazis and the Russian communists and the Chinese communists, we've looked at probably about 200 million people or so, murdered over the last 80 some odd years. And that's the biggest thing, that her constant, over and over and over again, these wars that she speaks of, the repentance, the praying of the rosary, that she is no longer able to hold back her son's mighty arm, all has to do with the consecration of Russia in some kind of, and whether or not you're a Catholic, and whether or not, and I was raised Irish Catholic, so maybe it's processing through my own belief systems and structures, or whether or not you believe this is an actual energy that comes from the earth, that it's Gaia, that it's Isis, that it's some feminine earth energy that seems to care about her children, if you will, on the surface of the earth. If we could just meditate and pray that Russia eventually becomes a seat of spirituality and a seat of religion and a way to change mankind's thought processes all across the world, that seemed to be the most important thing. And it's the one thing that the Catholic Church has steadfastly, so far, refused to do. After Sister Lucia has begged and Fatima and the Blessed Virgin has begged, they have yet to actually consecrate Russia and do the ceremony that's necessary to actually consecrate Russia within the Catholic Church.
All right. Anyway, bottom line, the release of the third secret was either only a partial release or inaccurate?
I believe that it was inaccurate because, and you know, you probably, you know, after speaking to Father Malachi, and I met Father Malachi years ago when he was teaching at the University of Santa Clara, that, and as I said, you probably know more about it than anybody, but I believe that the actual point of the Fatima prophecies was that there may be a satanic influence inside the Catholic Church, that possibly Satan himself would actually become the Pope or would become a person of great power and influence within the Catholic Church, that this may lead to the destruction of the Catholic Church. And of course, we have the prophecies of the prophet Malachi, who, you know, the Irish prophet from the 10th century, who Father Malachi is, of course, named after, and, you know, the various prophecies of Nostradamus, the prophecies of Malachi saying that we're in the last three popes now, that there would be the moon pope, that the pope that would rule for 28 days, which is Pope John, and then you had the sun pope, which is the which Pope John Paul II, whose reign would be very long, and he would travel throughout the world, and he would be a foreigner to Rome, and that we would have two popes left, that the next pope would be Pope Leo, also known as the Pope of the Glorious Olive Branch, that he would be famous for making peace. And it's actually very interesting because the inside bet is that it would be Bishop Martini, who is quite possibly going to replace the Pope when he resigns or dies at some point this year. But that's my one wrong prediction every year. I predict the Pope's going to die every year, and he calls me on
the phone. And he hangs in.
He calls me on the phone and goes, "I'm still alive, you bastard. I'm still here." So it's
well, he
hangs up the phone on me.
Doing very well. It's absolutely amazing. You look at the man and you wonder how he's alive, but there's something keeping him alive.
Well, if it's Bishop Martini, it would be interesting because, you know, martinis, olives, they have a tendency to go together, and this one is going to be known as the Pope of the Glorious Olive Branch. And then you have the last of the popes, that the prophet Malachi, the Irish prophet standing on the hills of Rome, gave a series of duotrains, two-line prophecies about each of the popes until you get up to the last four, and then he gave a series of quatrains, four lines about each one of them. Actually, in the last pope, Pope Peter, the Roman, he gave a sextane, which is six lines. So you had John, the moon pope, the sun pope, the Pope of the Glorious Olive Branch, Pope Leo the 14th, and then the very last pope that he called the Black Pope or the Dark Prince, which was supposed to be Pope Peter of Rome, that the last would be the first, and that the last pope of the Catholic Church would be Pope Peter. And I don't.
How close to the actual end times do you think we are, Sean?
Oh, we have a long way to go. I mean, I think the reason I'm one of the few people left standing in the prophecy and prediction field is because I know we're in it for the long haul. I don't see the planet flipping over, or you know, Colorado ever becoming the new West Coast of the United States. Yeah, I very much see that the United States and Canada are I believe very much in prophecy as the kingdom of heaven, and as it's described in the book of Joel, where it talks about that the kingdom of heaven would have a great river to the south, that on the east and the west it would have shining seas, and its northern border would be the top of the world. And I also believe that there are two very specific sets of prophecy that have to do with the old Holy Land, the land of Canaan and Israel, and the new Holy Land, which I think is the United States. And the long haul that we're in now is a 40-year Exodus period that starts in 1999 that begins to pick up with the year 2000. My prediction was that it would be the year of the volcanoes, that 2001 would be the year of the earthquakes, and that we're in a 40-year Exodus period that then leads up to the year 2040, where I definitely see the return of some kind of messianic figure, a Christ-like figure.
That's not too far down line, 40 years.
But it's not, once again, it's not the end of the world. We're not even now at the beginning of the I guess what you would call the true biblical millennium.
But if it really is Christ coming back, that will certainly set in place a chain of events.
It sets in place the messianic age, that we go through another 500 years of a series of messiahs. And when I say the Christ, I say an embodiment of the Christos energy.
All right, listen, we've got to hold it here. We're at the bottom there. I've got good news and bad news for you. Which do you prefer first?
Okay, bad news.
Bad news? The bad news is that the button on your website for ordering your newsletter has assumed room temperature.
Oh, God, okay.
It's dead.
All right.
The good news is your website is still up, but
okay,
people
good.
Can't order your newsletter that way. So hold on, Sean. We'll be right back. We'll get you that number, but you cannot order it on the website. The best laid plans of mice, men, and prophets. Stay right there.
He talked and talked, and I heard him say that she had the longest, blackest hair, the prettiest green eyes anywhere, and Marie's the name by the greatest flame. Though I smiled, the tears inside were burning. I wished him luck and then said a goodbye.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
From the desert of the sea, and that's what we are right now as the rain pounds down. It's going to keep pounding down for at least the next 5 days, as far out as CNN is looking. Rain here in the desert and dryness and even fires in other areas where there ought to be a lot of rain. And the perfect storm perhaps forming and getting ready to move over the northeast. So I hope you all are getting ready up there. The forecasters say this could be a rough one. So, I don't know, check your supplies and get ready. It could be the perfect snowstorm headed for you now. Well, I sure do wish Sean had a computer where he is now and could get on my website so he could see this sky ring or whatever it is this trucker in Utah took photographs of, a series of 7 photographs. It's very hard to describe other than to call it a sky ring. It's a very dark, apparently quite large ring in the sky. And this trucker was just amazed, stopped his truck, took the photographs, sent them to me. I put them on the website. And the only way I can describe this thing is to say it looks like some sort of portal. It looks like some kind of portal, and it could easily be that or not. You know, it could be something from a rocket launch, I suppose, although that doesn't look likely. It could be smoke, but, I mean, that's what people are saying, you know, but it doesn't look like that to me, not at all. It's too well defined. What the hell could that come from? It's just hanging there in the sky. Doggonest thing you ever saw, Sean. I wish you could get online and see it.
I'm stuck in a hotel, obviously, in New York City.
I understand.
Let me, to actually play into that, once again, reading from the prediction issue of the newsletter. And by the way, I just talked to my web mistress, and everything's fixed on the site. So they just fixed it. Actually, when you mentioned it, they
really
went in and fixed it. So
all right.
There's 2 buttons. There's Delphi products and another button that says to order the Delphi newsletter. So those are now fixed.
Oh.
And the 888-452-7999 number, obviously they've only got about 20 people working. They're slammed. It may be a little while before people can get in to order. And as I said, they get the predictions issue of the newsletter, the one that's just been published, and the March issue will also come at the same time because we just completed that one.
All right.
But out of the February 21st, and this was all in a package that I sent you on Wednesday, and I know you haven't been feeling well, but let me quote from the newsletter, from page 13 of the newsletter. Once again, I'm seeing what appears to be massive UFO activity returning to Arizona. And actually, remember, it was back in 97, and it was in March of 97 when I was on the show, and the UFOs started over Phoenix.
I remember.
Yeah, and we had all the calls, all the people calling in about those. These black triangles are being seen now, after I predicted them several months ago, all across the United States in major ways, and a renewal of the same UFO activity that we saw in 97 and 98 in Arizona. Salt Lake City, Utah, is just going to get plastered again with very high winds running through the valley, and what appears to be a series once again I'm picking up all of these creepy crawly quakes running through that area, and many new fissures or fault seams will be found in Salt Lake City and the Utah Valley areas. Another interesting thing about Utah, in the Unitaw Basin area, Vernal, Roosevelt, and Dutchinese, we'll see an increase of UFO activity, unexplained lights, noises, and cattle mutilations, and this is a return of the 1970s when unexplained lights and animal mutilations were seen in that same area. And one interesting thing I noticed while looking at the maps is that Salt Lake City and Phoenix are on the same latitude. Now, Flagstaff and Sedona are just slightly off that line, and there's an abundance of UFO activity along this line. This line also reaches up towards Ogden, Utah, where Hill Air Force Base is located, as well as Brigham City with numerous military installations. And also on this same line is Cache Valley near Logan, Utah, where many crop circles and cattle mutilations have occurred. It is my strong feeling that interdimensional craft target in on these major electromagnetic ley lines, which may account for certain areas having increased UFO sightings, and watch for this whole area to make the news for more cattle mutilations, UFOs, and other mysterious phenomenon.
Well, as you know, that's where the ranch is.
Area. In the new Area 6413, where they moved a bunch of the shuttle programs out of Area 51, and then up to that area. That's the north.
Well, that wasn't exactly the ranch I was talking about, but there have been a lot of unusual occurrences around there. Just we'll leave it at that. Listen, we're going to go to phone lines at the top of the hour, or after the top of the hour. So between now and then, I guess we better cover everything you consider really important. I consider the weather and what's coming very important. Are there safe areas? People always ask about that, Sean. Are there areas that are going to be safer than others as the weather worsens?
Well, if you just want to get through this winter, the areas that are being slammed now are going to be the western coast of the United States, the eastern coast of the United States. As far as the weather goes, as far as safe areas,
most of the people, though.
Yeah, inside your house. I don't really have a good answer for that. The biggest thing that's going to be the problem throughout this entire year is it's actually going to be a relatively light year for hurricanes, but tornadoes are going to be savage across the central part of the United States. Are just going to be record tornadoes all across Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma. We're going to see the same repeat once again of about 3 years ago. Remember that amazing video that the man took where he had like five tornadoes? It was on most of the news where five tornadoes walking across the plain.
Sure.
These are the wind kachinas that the Indians talked about that would be picking up in these right about this time. That's the biggest thing. I mean, the winter is going to slam us. I do think that there is artificial weaponry that's involved in, as far as the HAARP project goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why they do it, but it just seems to be an irresponsible use of the technology that is, that's blasting this area. And I think the biggest thing we have to worry about is also going to be, this whole year being the year of the earthquakes, and with Mount Popo erupting and Cocos Plate beginning to shift in Central America, which has now caused the Central America, the El Salvador quake, and at the top of the Juan de Fuca Fault with the 7.0, the deep quakes that I predicted happening there, we're going to see very substantial quakes in San Francisco and Los Angeles this year. Mm-hmm. Most of this, and this is one of the unusual things, we're in a 12-year Chinese cycle, so this is the year of the snake. And I always noticed that in snake years, like 1989, which is when the last San Francisco quake hit, which was a snake year, the energy seems to build towards the end of the year. And so we're looking at November, December, and January of the beginning of next year, towards the end of the year of the snake, it's almost as if the snake sort of coils up and then springs. And every year in a snake year, it's usually war, major earthquakes, but also freedom as well. I mean, you know, in 89...
Yeah, well, you talked about San Francisco and Los Angeles, two areas listening to us right now very intently, and you talked about earthquakes. How big?
The big quake that we're going to have is going to be a 7, or I would say in the 6.8 to 7.1 range, is going to be in the Barstow area, and we're tracking that quake for June through July.
Barstow?
Yeah, it's the land. It's the Barstow.
Wonderful.
Gap.
That's right. Yeah, great. Yeah, it's just
that
great.
Area that opened up with landers and back in '92, and then we had the Hercule quake, which was the real mysterious one that the military is dropping all kinds of bombs on that then hit in October of '99.
Barstow's just over the hill.
Yeah. Well, it's and then after that, I'm seeing a quake. There's actually there's a series, and what builds up to it is a series of pinging quakes that actually skip across Southern California, that seemed to go from like Whittier, San Bernardino, Redlands. It looks like a stone skipping across a pond, because there's like a 5 and then like a 5.5 and then what seems to be like another 5.5 skipping across this area. And if that scenario takes place, which
yes.
is what I'm seeing for late June through July,
yes.
then we're looking at a very substantial quake in the East Bay of San Francisco, the Vallejo area. And this is kind of a weird thing, because it seems to hit Vallejo first, and then it skips San Francisco down into the Hollister, Gilroy, that sort of southern area, but very, very large tremblers coming across California. And, as I said, this will be the year of the earthquakes, and it already has been. And, one other thing too that I thought should be mentioned is that when the Gujarat quake happened in India, what I did is I just took out the world and a world globe and sort of stuck my fingers on either side of it. So, you know, it's not like it's scientific. But one of the things I did notice is that at the exact same time the Gujarat quake happened, that directly on the other side of the planet from Gujarat, there was a 4.5 quake in Ohio. And, the Gujarat quakes, that area of Pakistan, and I do think that these quakes that we're seeing in India are a direct result of the Pakistani nuclear experiments in 1998. And that these nuclear experiments have now, because of the Hindu Kush, because there's a series of cave systems and structures underneath the mountain ranges of the Hindu Kush that actually separate India and Pakistan. You had the Gujarat quake, and now you're having quakes resonating back at the other side, back in Pakistan. And I believe at the other side of the world, at the same time, you're also having an activation of the top section of the New Madrid Fault. This is going to build over a period of time, because I see the major quake disasters in the United States. You know, we're still about 3 to 5 years away from when we're talking about rupturings of the New Madrid Fault or major fracturing quakes that cause huge amounts of damage. We're still quite a ways away. And you know, as far as California goes, as I said, the big quake, the big one that everybody's worried about for Southern California, I haven't seen happening until well into the year 2010.
All right, good. Diane in Kodak, Tennessee asks, does your guest, Sean, predict
yes.
power outages for all of the USA? Rolling blackouts recently in California. Is it going to be okay now?
Well, this is what I specifically saw. I'm trying to go back to the. I've got all the newsletters here in front of me, and I'm trying to roll through this. The biggest blackouts that I saw were mostly weather related, and then, but it's not the entire United States. It's sections of the grid.
Well, there's going to be plenty related to the weather.
Related to the weather, and then of course just human stupidity in California, actually, just because of our governor and the supposed deregulation of the power industries there. But this was something, I'm trying to find the blackouts in the specific area, because it's much better for me to actually go back into the newsletter and give them the exact...
You may recall the great blackouts that occurred in Montreal. Those were very serious, went on for a long time, weather-related, but boy, they went on a long time.
We haven't had them quite yet. I mean, there's the shifting of the electromagnetic fields. You know, we're still not through the solar cycles either, so... with the solar cycles and with the weather.
Well, as you know, the polarity on the sun just flipped a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my. Well,
oh, you didn't know? You didn't know that?
No, I didn't.
It just flipped, and when the polarity flips, you know you're at the peak of the solar cycle. That was the peak, and, of course, that means we'll be in the peak for some time here.
Oh, wow. Well, the biggest thing I saw.
What do you mean? Oh, wow. What does that mean?
That means that what we're gearing up for is that if when those electromagnetic poles shift, and this is getting into much more into the future stuff, and of course the further away you get from the present time, the more it all kind of sounds like science fiction. But the one big thing, a couple of the things that I've seen. 2012, between 2012 and 2013, is an electromagnetic shifting of the poles. Not a flipping of the planet, but an electromagnetic shifting of the poles here. And if we have polar shifts like that on the sun, then we're actually looking at I believe, and this may be my own ignorance speaking, but I believe that we've got actual shifts of the various planets might not be too far behind. There's something, did you get the photograph that I sent you of the Soho photos and the email that I sent? Because I sent you the photo that was taken in 1994, which was of a supposedly Audrain taking a photo of a Pleiadian craft, him saying all the way back then that there was something wrong with the sun and that there was a lot of UFO activity that his group of Pleiadians, he claimed, were in the process of actually fixing the sun, doing something that had to do with stabilizing the nature of the sun. And then the Soho photographs that I sent you seem to be the exact same type of craft that were caught in the penumbra of the sun taken a few weeks ago by the NASA SOHO satellites. And back in May, just to answer that lady's question, May 19th of 2000, when I said electricity breaks down as massive power grids go out in the Pacific Northwest, Nevada, Arizona, California, and the Northeast, whole areas are blacked out for many hours, in a few cases days. And this had to do with, but as I said, this was back in May 19th of 2000. So, I mean, as far as the entire power grid of the United States going down, that's not going to happen. But I've been predicting for many months now, before this winter happened, that the power grids would begin to break down in New England and all across the northeastern seaboard. And, a lot of this also connects to the skyrocketing prices of natural gas, which I'd predicted about a year before that. So, to answer her question, yes, they'll break down, but I don't see it lasting for weeks, days at best.
All right. We all know that one day China is going to say, all right, we want Taiwan back and we want it back now. Mm. Now, I have no idea what this country will actually do in that case. I guess we will, to some degree, attempt to protect Taiwan. How far we'll take it, I don't know. What do you know?
That we have a commitment in the region that, there's a huge amount here's your problem. Your problem would be is that let's say, Taiwan has nuclear weapons. And let's say that the United States gets in between China and Taiwan and it gets into some kind of shooting war over Taiwan. The question is that most of our motherboards and something like 30% of most of the computers that are actually distributed here in the United States are actually put together in Taiwan.
Oh, I know.
So what happens to the technological infrastructure of the United States should that occur? The Chinese are not at a parity level with the United States yet. They will be in about 2 years. And, of course, they will be because they've stolen so much stuff out of Los Alamos, because Clinton has outright given them stuff. What Clinton hasn't given them, he's sort of surreptitiously, they surreptitiously have actually bought from the Israelis because they've been hawking, American military hardware on the world market for some time. Push is going to come to shove with the Red Chinese. And my, prediction has been for quite some time that the main shooting war that comes with what I think is going to be the last great world war, the biblical revelation prediction of the kings of the East and the army of 200 million, I don't think they invade the Middle East. I think they invade the United States. And that, but this gets into a whole series of other predictions that I had about the federal capital actually moving to Colorado by that time.
You actually predict the Chinese will physically invade the United States?
Yes, by about 2017 or so. And that they're stopped in the Pacific Northwest, specifically stopped in Denver, Colorado, which in the future is actually called the Plateau of Judgment. And actually Den actually means to judge in the Hebrew, and Ver means plateau. So it actually does mean Plateau of Judgment. We kill most of them on their way here. I mean, the vision that I've had from going about 100 years in the future and then looking back is we manage to fry most of them with every weapon we've got somewhere in Alaska so that only, half their force gets here, but that's still like 100 million people. And I pray to God that's a future that doesn't happen. It's a global game of push and shove, and we're looking at, I think we're looking at the Chinese making a serious play for Taiwan.
Well, isn't your look at that far into the future subject to as much timeline difficulty as a lot of remote viewers have?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's
that gives people a little comfort.
It's you know, prophecy, as anybody you know who I hope studies this field will tell you, prophecy and prediction is the single hardest thing to do. And in regards to remote viewing, I haven't seen anybody successfully remote view. Well, you know, I can't say successfully remote view because how can you prove any of it? You know, how can you prove any prophecy and prediction until the prophecy and the prediction itself actually does come true?
That's correct.
The only thing that I can say to people is that if you look in the if you look at the quinta of my predictions and you see that you know, that I've been right a heck of a lot more times than I've been wrong, and that my overall view is to try to get people off the sort of parlor games of simply predicting, you know, tit for tat, and you know, the stock market's going to do this. I mean, nobody ever asked Isaiah or Ezekiel or Daniel, gee, you know, tell me when the wrath of God is going to come down so that I can be out of town that day. It has more to do with showing people the big picture on the front of the box than it has to do with people like myself trying to fit the minuscule puzzle pieces together.
All right, good enough. Hold it right there. We'll take a break, and after the top of the hour, we'll take calls. All right?
Okay.
All right, done deal. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are.
The sight of a touch, or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. That all these things in our memory stored and they use them to help.
Wanna take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nod.
You know, since we've got a prophet here tonight, Sean David Morton, there is just one more thing I need to ask him about before we go to the phones, and we've got a lot of people who want to talk to him, and that's disease, particularly mad cow disease. I'd be kind of interested to see what he thinks about that. In a moment, we'll find out. Into the abyss we jump once again. Sean,
yes,
let
sir.
Me ask you about disease. You can't let profit get away without asking about disease. There is specifically mad cow disease, and we're hearing all kinds of terrible things from people about what may be ahead. What is ahead, do you
think? I do think that we're looking at food shortages, you know, global food shortages, beginning around 2005 or so. I think that... Oh, it's just horrible. It's just man's stupidity again. I mean, feeding, you know, soylent cow is what they're doing. They're grinding up dead cows and feeding them to other cows and expecting this to not have any effect whatsoever. You know, as far as disease, we're just seeing the opening phases amongst livestock now. You know, chickens in Asia and cattle all across Europe, spreading to sheep now. You know, eventually leading up to a human flu, And this
flu.
One of the, pardon me?
Did you say flu?
Flu, yeah. A massive flu plague across the world that will kill millions sometime between around 2004 and about 2006. And this was once again one of my big predictions all the way back in 1994, that around the turn of the century, between like 1999, 98, we would have these mysterious new flu viruses that would be resistant to antibiotics. You know, we're already having a flu epidemic across the United States, which is, I think the numbers of people that are actually dying from this flu epidemic are being covered up. The only thing that I found, too, and I mentioned this because I think I had the same thing you had, was that I was taking a lot of Echinacea golden seal vitamin C, and olive leaf extract seems to be the one thing that blows this bizarre upper respiratory
It's terrible. I tried Echinacea. I took Echinacea right through this, and I am coming out of it fairly early. I know people that have been a month into it.
Yeah, I got it in September and was down for 2 months, because then you get up, and what happens is you eat and you start putting on weight, but then you get up and you fall back down again from the same thing.
Yep.
The biggest thing I found is when I started taking the olive leaf extract, I kept taking the Echinacea golden seal and it just wasn't working. So I took the olive leaf extract and it blew it out in about 48 hours. You have to take it with food. If you take the olive, there's a tincture you can get, and there's pills that you can get as well. Because you take about two of these things about three times a day. You have to take it with food because it'll make your stomach a little bit queasy. But that was the one thing that I found that snapped me out of this, because I had this junk all the way through January.
Well, I mean, people know what happened in 1918, and it could obviously happen again.
It's a repeat of that. There were the 1918 Spanish influenza epidemic, which is really what was responsible for ending the First World War. Killed between 20 and 25 million people worldwide, and it killed about 5 million people here in the United States. And we're looking at a repeat of that same type of a breakout or influenza epidemic on a global scale. Remember, too, that when it killed all those people back in 1918, it did not have jet aircraft as the carriers for this disease. So that's going to be a lot of what's going to change society, and this is something I've been talking about since 1994, that the biggest thing, most of the things that I've seen coming down start up around 2005. This is when, between 2003 and 2005, is when we see a series of economic collapses, when food shortages begin, the weather gets really out of control, because I don't think you've seen anything yet. The flu epidemics and influenza begin to occur right around 2005. There's a very interesting prediction in the Great Pyramid that has the beginning, and of course I know you've been to the pyramid a couple of times.
Yes.
That when you go down into the pit, what they call the Well of Souls.
Yes.
And you can sort of stand up. You know that part where you have to crawl down that tunnel through the very last part of it?
Yes, I do.
And then you stand up going, that hurts your back, doesn't it? And then you stand up going into that room. That's right about the year 1900 or so, and you can stand up and walk, and then that pit in the floor, the edge of that pit, if you believe the time coding of Rutherford and Peter Lemassurier in his book The Great Pyramid Decoded, the edge of that pit is actually 2005. And
people don't understand. You've got to be in peak physical condition to go to Giza and really adventure.
Yeah.
I they don't say, but I wonder how many people have had heart attacks.
Probably quite a few.
All right, we've got to go to the phones. Here they are. Here they come. First time caller line. You're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Good. Thanks, sir.
Hey, I'm calling from Redondo Beach, Hollywood Riviera area. I'm just south of you in Hermosa.
A homeboy. It's all good in the hood, buddy.
Yep. Homeboy. And I've, I'm a Southern California native, grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I've lived here my whole life. And I'll tell you, that first weekend in February, it was in the high 80s, and I'm like a mile from the beach, which would be an anomaly for the summertime here, because we have that offshore breeze.
Right.
It blew me away. My office is in the San Fernando Valley. I drove over to the valley. Here it is, middle of winter. It was in the 90s. 3 days later, on February 7th, I'm sitting in my office, and darn it, if it doesn't start snowing for about 15 minutes.
Oh my
God. I've never seen that. I've lived here my whole life. I grew up in the valley. And 4 days earlier, it was in the 90s, and it was snowing. I had an office full of people gawking out the window. This seems way beyond any type of weather anomaly. Do you really think that this is HARP-influenced, and what would be the objective of it?
I don't know. I know that this is the first time that we've seen snow in the Southern California area that far south since 1983. And my prediction all the way back, when I was doing my predictions on the maps, and I just started getting this, I mean, for any of you who do map work or, you know, who understand this, and when you look at Alaska when they turn this thing on, it is a screeching sound. It is like a blasting 150 decibel white noise that just comes out at you. And I don't know what the hell they're up to. I mean, it's not like they call me and say, hey, Sean, this is what we're going to do this week. I just know that when I do my meditations on the maps, that there are these devices, you know, the HARP project in Alaska. And I know they've got one in Alaska. They've got one in Canada. They seem to also have one in the Gold Coast of Africa. You know, I've been told by friends of mine in intelligence that TRW developed a space-based HARP project that they actually were using as part of Desert Storm.
But, you know, his question, Sean, really is a good one. And I know you can't really answer it, but why would our own government screw with our weather, which would screw with our economy, and, you know, shooting yourself in the foot? I mean, why would we, what possible reason and motive would we have for doing that?
Exactly.
I have no idea, other than they maybe just, you know, don't know their own strength, that they're testing, a Star Wars platform. I mean, you know, HARP is used for a lot of different things. It's not just used to mess up the weather. It's used for, long range satellite. You can blow satellites out of the sky with this thing. You can create, basically lenses in the upper ionosphere. It actually hardens pockets of the atmosphere. So you can then bounce things off it, like microwaves or various types of transmission.
I know.
You know, it does a whole lot of different things, and we're on a war footing now where we're getting ready to either go in back into Iraq or back into, you know, a very heavy war footing in the Middle East. And these are just weapons of mass destruction that, on an electromagnetic frequency that are being tested, that unfortunately, because it is in Alaska, every time they turn this damn thing on.
Yeah, I guess you can't test HARP underground like nukes.
No, it grabs onto the jet stream and slams it down the
maybe the only answer, sir, is they're testing.
That could be. Hey, Sean, I've got one quick question.
Yeah, sure.
About the last two popes after John Paul.
Okay.
Do you see, under the reign of one of those two popes, the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church reunifying?
No. The only reason I say that is because, you know, I'm basing this once again on you know, the prophecies of Malachi, who's been pretty much right so far.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it seems as though this last pope is not really such a bad guy. This black pope, as he calls him, this Pope Peter of Rome.
Okay.
But it seems to be some kind of some kind of war, almost an invasion of Italy. Something happens where the entire Catholic Church is basically shattered, and he's the last pope because of the I don't know if it's an invasion of Italy or because of it's a great war, but the Catholic Church itself somehow is just fractured. I mean, you know, it kind of ceases to exist, and that's one of the reasons why he's the last one. And that's the best I can tell you. But hey, I'm in Hermosa Beach. Stop by, man. I'm on the corner of 22nd and Hermosa. So
I know exactly where you are.
I'll buy you breakfast. Come on by anytime.
All right, Sean.
All right,
caller.
Take care. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Sean.
This is Christopher calling from Hawaii.
Hi, Christopher.
How you doing?
Good, man.
Oh, God, you're scaring the hell out of me.
I try not to.
Well, I tell you what, what scares me about it is it rings so true.
Thank you.
One thing I'll say briefly, Art, is if your flu's still hanging in there, you know, the old remedy of chicken soup and lemon hot toddy?
Oh, yes, I'm doing all that.
Well, the thing you got to do about the chicken soup is you got to take the garlic cloves and grind them up into there. I mean, fresh garlic, none of this artificial garlic tablets, but the real thing. And I also might mention that I did buy some of that HGH.
Yes.
OHGH.
Yes.
And I'm 51 years old, and it works.
Yes,
I'm telling you, it works.
I know.
So,
you're going through puberty again.
Yeah, right. Hey, my hair is turning back again. It's growing in, and it's dark.
Well, awesome.
Let's see. Where do I want to start? Okay, I was going to ask you about HARP. The one thing I'd like to know here is, and my take on it is this. In the 1950s, you gentlemen are familiar with Wilhelm Reich, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. He built the Cloud Buster, and apparently he did some testing here in the Hawaiian Islands and was able to generate storms and do all sorts of things back in the 50s.
So it is said.
And, well, you know, he was locked up in prison. The government confiscated his equipment, and they've had a possession of it ever since. I'm wondering if they've been experimenting with it all this time, and it got out of their control. They lost control of it somewhere in the 70s or so, and they're desperately trying to reestablish control over a system that they were experimenting with this thing for so long, and now they're trying desperately to undo what they've done.
Now, there is an
interesting, worse.
That's an interesting theory, actually, because there's not much. You just can't close your eyes and imagine a reason why they'd screw with our weather to this degree.
Well, that's actually a better theory than you might think, because now we've gone through El Nino and La Nina, and now we're moving into the phase they're calling La Nada, which is actually a rebalancing of the weather and energy patterns. Even though I know with these severe storms and the savage things that are going on, but at the same time, later on this year, the whole hurricane season seems to even out. So, you know, we've got all these storms and tornadoes, but we don't have the hurricanes that I see we having. And he's right. There may be a possibility that you have to overcompensate to rebalance something, because it does seem as though, at least for the end of this year, the weather patterns begin to rebalance themselves.
All right, caller.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, sir.
What I'm curious about, Sean, is what is your percentage of accuracy? I'm just curious.
Well, I don't really give it percentages. I mean, I in no way, shape, or form claim to be God or claim to be right all the time. The best I can do is I had a friend of mine, Don Durrett, go through all of my various predictions, and Don gave me a dead-on hit rate of 55%, and then what he called a partial hit rate of another 30% above that.
This was a friend of yours. We need a large accounting agency.
Yeah.
And a sealed envelope.
Waterford and Shrey or something.
That's right.
The best I can do is that what I do on Art's program is that every time we get the tape of Art's show, we transcribe the tape so that we can go back and refer to it. I'm in all honesty, I try to say, okay, here's all the places where I was right, here's all the places where I was wrong. I gave my predictions about the election, for example. I was completely wrong about Christine Todd Whitman, about the vice presidential candidate. For example, when I said 2 years ago that I saw it would either be Dianne Feinstein or Lieberman of Connecticut would be the vice presidential candidate. You know, is that a hit or not? I mean, it obviously wasn't Dianne Feinstein,
but
hitting Joe Lieberman when nobody expected a Jewish vice presidential candidate.
That's right.
You know, it's a pretty
good
hit.
Though.
So, close as only works in horseshoes, hand grenades, and psychic predictions. So.
Yeah, but when you're dealing with specific predictions of the kind you've been dealing with, 50% is tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually above that. I mean, the exact flat-on, quoting from the newspapers months before it happens, 55%. And that was up until, and Don, as an independent researcher, only did them up through 97. And my accuracy and my hit rate in the last 2 years has actually improved radically in terms of my track record. And once again, I keep track of this on Art's program. I put my predictions out there. I mean, every time I come on a show or put my newsletter out, you're really hanging your butt out over the line.
Yeah, caller, you've got to admit,
if
you've listened through the Night Tonight caller, his butt's out there big time.
Yeah.
Right, and you know what? I'll tell you what, you got to thank Art, because this is a living experiment. Thank you, Art.
It is that. Thank you. All right, let's keep moving. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hi there, Art.
Hi there.
Hi there, Sean.
Hi.
I'm just over the mountain in Henderson listening to you on AM 720, KW.
KDWN,
sorry, KDON.
That's right.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know, first of all, real quick thoughts on mad cow disease. From living experience, we just lost my mother-in-law last year of it, 2020.
So
and 2020, I also said tonight that it wasn't here yet. They were interviewing people in Europe. You know, my mother-in-law had a brain biopsy done. She was diagnosed with CDC crutch-filled Jacob disease, actually. CDC actually came out to the hospital and took a look at her and quarantined off her room, and we weren't even allowed to visit her for at least 24 hours.
Really?
I mean, we got pathology reports.
Excuse me, where did this occur?
This occurred in a little old town of Delano, California, which is about 30 miles north of Bakersfield. She died in Bakersfield, and I tell you, when it hit her, she was gone from totally being fine within 6 months. She was just totally...
Now, I've spoken to doctors who say that it is here and that rapid onset of Alzheimer's is being misdiagnosed. Mad cow is being misdiagnosed as rapid onset.
They originally diagnosed her with Alzheimer's,
uh-huh.
and then they went and said that it's not Alzheimer's because she did get the shakes a lot, but then she started hallucinating, saying that she started seeing snakes and just fire, demons. I mean, she was just really bad. She started shaking up, and towards the end, she got really stiff, just like the 2020 visual tonight over in Europe. So it's definitely here, and you know what? I just think it's just a total conspiracy that they're trying to cover it up so that we don't get in a national panic and stop eating beef. I don't know.
Well, listen, I don't know what to say. I mean, if this caller is right, and it's hard to believe, I'm not going to doubt him, I guess, but if something was officially diagnosed on a death certificate that way, you would think the CDC would have no choice whatsoever. I mean, if it was a definitive, absolute diagnosis, if there was no gray area, I don't see how they could not announce it. Or is that naive, Sean?
Well, once again, it's not like they're calling us and telling us what's going on. First off, to the caller, that's horrible. Your story is
just horrible.
My condolences, and remember too that the AIDS virus, I mean, the cows have had bovine AIDS, or what they call, a bovine visna virus, forever. Sheep visna and bovine visna, and it was actually when mysteriously the AIDS virus began to jump species, supposedly after green monkey T cell research was done. This is, the artificial retrovirus version of how AIDS was actually released into the population. So it would not have been the first time that through some either, and I believe man-made means, that we actually have an animal disease, jump species into human beings, which is really rare because, once again, they just simply do not have the same genetic structure that we do, in regards to the DNA. And, so there may be some genetic engineering that's involved if we have a disease that is actually jumping species.
I have always just felt that, our government may be bad, but they're not downright absolutely evil. Viruses to release into the general population to kill off.
There are people out there who believe that that's what's going on. That there are.
I know.
I don't see that. I can see the only other thing that I can see is that I know that there are mega corporations out there that are obviously not very pleasant that are working hand in hand with the government.
Hold on, Sean. We're at the bottom of the hour. We've got a break. We'll be right back. Tradition, huh?
To reach our bell in the Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Premier Radio Network.
Indeed so. Sean David Morton is here, and we're doing predictions. Boy, are we doing predictions. All of them duly recorded on various audio tapes all around the country, and of course, our master tape here at the network. So we'll see. His, as he put it, butt is out there big time as of tonight. Back into the breach we jump with Sean David Morton. Sean, you're back on again.
Chung, just wanted to complete my thought about the food supply.
Yes,
once again.
Please.
And this relates directly to probably, I think, one of the most dastardly things that these companies are up to, which is this Terminator technology in seed reproduction. And it's really the only market that these big corporations don't control. They primarily control, they obviously control most of the power supply and the power grid. They control the oil supply. And the one last thing they really are trying to get their hands on is to drive out most of the family farms, bankrupt.
If you destroy the seeds, that's it.
Exactly.
The corporations control it all.
And then you control everything. And
tell them what the Terminator, tell them what it is.
The Terminator seed technology is basically a type of seed that won't germinate on its own. That you have to actually, it's a genetically engineered type of food grain. And the problem is that let's say you're a farmer that wants to grow organic food and you've got your plot of land and the person, farmer X or farmer Men in Black is farming right next to you.
Right.
And he's growing the Terminator seed. They will cross-pollinate back and forth with, bees and birds, et cetera, back and forth between these two farms and eventually kill your crops as well. The whole thing is a gigantic, rig by these multinational corporations, to force farmers to basically buy their seeds from companies like Monsanto, it is the single-handedly most devious, most dastardly thing that I've ever seen, to keep the distribution of the food supply, out of the hands of many, many people in the agricultural area and put it in the hands of a very small elite group of the multinational corporations. And I'm not exactly sure how mad cow disease slips into that outside of the fact that we've seen now this century some of these diseases which are beginning to jump species, quite possibly with some scientific help, for example, I believe in the AIDS virus. But the Terminator technology is probably where I think government and multinational corporations are working hand in hand to finally once and for all gain control of the food supply. So that you can't grow your own seeds, you have to go to some company and buy their genetically engineered seeds in order for the family farmer or anybody in the world to grow food.
All right, another change in topics here from Sam in Socorro, New Mexico.
All right.
Art, would you please ask Sean about Victor and the alien footage smuggled out of Area 51? Any news on that?
You know, we just since we did our interview with him,
yes.
I think like 3 years ago, I
yes.
think it was 97, man, that was
That's
a big
right.
year. He's, really nothing. The whole thing with the Area 51 alien interview, we still actually sell the tape on the website, which is the 2 minutes and 55 seconds of, what we believe to be actual footage of an extraterrestrial, who'd been captured and was being interrogated at Area 51. It's the kind of footage that drives UFO investigators insane because there's, you can't prove it or disprove it outside of the testimony of the eyewitness, and because Victor literally does fear for his life, was, I think, disappointed in the way the video was distributed. He originally approached Fox. Fox, I guess, wasn't interested, and then he approached Rocket Video and Tom Coleman, and I'm not sure Tom got the kind of distribution that he was looking for, although there were television ads and, a big campaign for it. Victor just, he won't come out and talk about it really. It's not the kind of thing that you can, it's not like a UFO photo or a piece of UFO footage, which investigators love because you can put it into a computer and you can do, parallax views on it and
sure.
you can figure that, the light bouncing off it and you can see that it's a big object and it's in the sky and there are points of reference to it. With this, you don't know. I mean, it's a creature at the end of a table in a darkened room behind what appears to be a plate of glass. A biocontainment field, if you will, that begins to cough up blood, and these doctors come in and try to help it, and it was up on your website.
Oh, yes.
We haven't heard anything from him. I've been trying to get him to come back on your show again, to see if there's been any developments on it. But
well,
you know,
keep working on it.
He was pretty. He's a pretty irascible guy, as I'm sure you've seen. And his
oh,
whole
yes.
attitude is,
I know.
You know, well, I risked my life, and you know, they could have killed me, and you know, this is the thanks I get. I think is so. He's pretty angry at the world right now.
All right. Well, if you can calm him down somewhere or another, chemically, whatever, send him back to the show. All right. First time caller line. You're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Good evening, Art. How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right.
Great. Hey, Sean.
Hey, sir.
It's Ross from Las Vegas.
Hey, Ross, buddy.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding, sir. I got a quick question for you.
Okay.
I wanted to find out, and this is kind of the question that I'd asked you the last time when you were on with Michael,
okay.
and we didn't really get a chance to get to it. Have you, through your predictions, been able to see any correlation with the pattern of the Hobie prophecies?
Oh, wow. Absolutely. And thank you. What a great question, Ross. I appreciate that a lot.
No problem.
You know, Grandfather Banyaka, of course, died a year or so back. But everything that the Hopi you're talking about is very much coming true. Their whole correlation of the dividing, that there would be two great, just in brief, the Hopi prophecies talk about that Michal, who's the great white brother, brought the races to the earth, the red race, the black race, the yellow race, and the white race. That it would be only the red race that would stay true to the land and true to the teachings of the great white brother, that the yellow, white, and black races would live the path of Kleanaskatsi, that their heads would be the ones of the two hearts, that their heads would be separated from their bodies in a way that they would live without being in tune with their hearts. And what happened was all these prophecies for the Hopi for America have come true when they've talked about the completion of Route 66, the lodge in the sky that's going to be completed in 2005, saying that the beginning of the earth changes would happen when men lived in a lodge in the sky. Two great shakings of the earth, the first one being World War I, and then World War II, that uranium would be taken out of the Hopi prophecy and turned into atomic weapons, what they called a gourd of ashes that would be thrown against the land of the yellow man. And then if we were to do that, then those gourds of ashes would be rained back down on the United States. And the biggest thing is that we're approaching what the Hopi call the time of the great decision or the great divide,
mm-hmm.
where we have a choice of either stepping back down and living more in tune and more in harmony with the land and, being kinder, being gentler, being more loving and more passionate towards one another, to live the love intent, which is really, and it was the point I wanted to make as we were closing too, is that that's where psychic ability comes from, Art, for all of those. And, you know, and we've talked about some very scary and some frightening things here, but the biggest point of all this, that for those of you who want to be psychic or sensitive or improve your psychic abilities, it's all about service. It's all about doing things for others. It's all about being kinder, being gentler. It's all about the love intent that's within you that empowers that spirit. It's all about moving within the blood of God and within the blood of the Creator towards a loving service towards, not only towards yourself, but towards others and towards the world that increases your psychic powers and your psychic abilities and allows you to be more in tune with the cosmos and get more in tune with the light-encoded reality matrix that we live in.
You know, so, you are just such an A-type personality, and you project so hard that you just can't stay away from that phone, can you?
I'm sorry.
I knew, through the night, I've known that it was kind of useless because of the way you are. But
I'm trying to talk over it, and it's. But as far as the Hopi prophecies coming true, the ones that are left now have to do with the lodge in the sky, which is now being completed about 2004 or so, this great decision that has to come, where many people are going to have to make the decision as to whether or not to live more in tune with the earth,
or else,
and with themselves, or face mass destruction. If
right.
if we make the choice to live more in tune with the earth, then they believe that the corn will grow again, that Michal returns, the great white brother, or as the Sioux believe that it's going to be a woman, a female messiah. The great white buffalo calf woman actually returns,
mm-hmm.
and teaches us the ways of peace, and we all live happily ever after.
All right, John, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
What an honor and a privilege. Can you tell me if you feel that the big one isn't going to happen in California, the earthquake isn't going to happen until 2010? Can you tell me what you see for Hawaii and the Illinois region in the way of weather and earthquakes and tornadoes, et cetera.
I take it you're in hurricane. Illinois. You must be in Illinois.
Yes.
All right.
Specifically for Illinois, what we've talked about has just been the radical changes in weather. For this year, my predictions for this year were, as I said, weather patterns that looked like terrorist actions, that were just, one day it would be, rather balmy, 60 above, and then, 40 and 50 below with wind chill factors, which has happened all across the central part of the Midwest. The biggest thing about the Midwest that they have to worry about would have to do with the New Madrid Fault. One of the mainstays of the Edgar Cayce predictions has a lot to do with the rupturing of the New Madrid Fault. The last time it happened, which was the largest earthquake actually in continental U.S. history, was an 8.3 that occurred, I believe, in 1812, if my history serves me directly, with the Mississippi River running backwards, widening the Mississippi River in certain points, which would then shake up the central part of the U.S. That's not coming for a while. The quake that I see, the big quake in Southern California in 2010, there's a series of things that I see happening before that occurs. The biggest one that I talked about in my predictions was seeing a new structure that was built in Los Angeles that looks like an angel. It's a big tower that's got an angel with what looks like a glowing sword that's built somewhere in downtown L.A. Because as I project forward towards where this quake comes, I see this big building that looks like kind of it's just a tower with an angel on the top of it. I keep wanting to say Statue of Liberty, but it's got an angel that becomes more of a symbol for Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. As far as Illinois, the best thing about where you live in the central part of the U.S. is that you're away from the coastlines, and the basic trend is that you're going to see the world water levels just over the past 10 years or so begin to, or in the next 10 years, are going to be rising all across the world. And, people are going to have to start slowly moving inwards from the coast. And of course, there in Chicago, where you're at, you're very close to the food supply. So the United States, for all of the earth changes, no matter what catastrophes occur, the United States is still going to be the safest place in the world because we have roads and we grow a lot of food and we can get food and water and power to people. Russia grows just as much food as we do, but they don't have the roads and they don't have the trucks and they don't have the buses to get it to their population.
All right, very quickly, Sean, what about the Hawaiian Islands?
The Hawaiian Islands, right now, they seem pretty quiescent. They're, I don't see any major volcano activity occurring. I try not to do global predictions unless I do my meditations directly on it. The hurricane season is actually, I think, for this fall, is actually fairly quiet,
mm-hmm.
so they don't really have that much to worry about. The biggest thing I would look for is the west coast of the United States this year. And the trigger points, once again, to reiterate, are going to be the eruption of Mount Fuji in Japan, the eruption of Mount Pelée in Martinique in the Lesser Antilles. We've already had the eruption of Mount Popocatépetl, which has been the trigger for Cocos Plate shifting and the San Andreas reactivating and all of these quakes along Central America.
All right then, ma'am, summing up, be glad you're in Illinois.
Yeah,
but my kids
okay.
are in L.A. Do you see quakes in L.A.?
Yes, he does.
Yeah,
L.A. and San Francisco.
Coming up in June and July, and then some pretty substantial quakes in October in San Francisco.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Just had to say that I know it bugs you. I think you're so powerful on the radio, I got your cold or your flu.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking so.
You're in for it.
Late night radio, it's back where it should be. We did miss you. So I got a question for Sean.
Sure.
Sean, do you know if Nostradamus had any writings that specifically addressed anything about Mad Cow outbreak?
Don't know, but they're so arcane. The best thing I could do is maybe in the next newsletter or so. My Nostradamus expert on this is my friend Robert Egan, who's really just devoted himself to the quatrains. He hasn't shown me anything recently. I haven't seen it in my own perusal of it, but compared to people who are the real experts, who I would certainly bow to, would be people like John Hoag and Robert Egan. I can't really answer the question. I don't really know.
Okay. Hey, Art?
Yes.
When's your next show going to be on UFO sightings? Because I've got a story for you.
Well, those shows happen as the sightings occur.
Oh,
all right?
Okay.
So we'll do one of these days. Usually it's with contemporary occurrences. First time caller line. You're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Hi, this is Chuck from Washington, Indiana.
Hi, Chuck.
I had a question. I found this two-page report from the census, and they're crunching the numbers for the new 2001 census, and They have this thing where they call it the mean center of the population in the U.S. and the median center of the population of the U.S. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, and?
And they calculate it every 10 years, and I just wondered why you thought they'd go to so much trouble to do that. It's probably gotten easier with computers, but they've been doing this since about 1790.
I don't know. It's just something they statistically do as a result of the totality of the census. So calculating the mean center is not that hard.
Yeah, they kind of do it two-way where they draw on north and south and east and west and who lives on each side. And
just
who,
part of the number crunching, sir.
Yeah. And then
keeps our government workers working.
I was touched about your words about the Native American people, and thanks to your show, I met with the Ghost Children when you had your talk with Black Fox a couple years ago.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you. We're almost out of time. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Oh, hello. Am I on?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, real quickly, I wanted to ask about what you think the effect of G.W. Bush's policies on the environment recently, or I think just yesterday, refusing to participate in the Kyoto Conference on Global Warming and slashing, I believe it was 22% from the renewable fuels and energy program and drilling in Alaska. I'm just wondering, what do you think the effect it will be on the global warming, accelerating it, or the weather changes, and what can we do? Do you think we can influence him to reverse it? I mean, this is big oil.
Yeah, all I can tell you is, what you see is what you get with GW, and, you know, he's a big oil family. They're just gonna drill the snot out of Alaska. And, he's, unfortunately, his reversal of a lot of ecological policies, especially when people are going to be screaming at, gas prices at $2 a gallon and
I heard three in Chicago.
Yeah, and, three somewhere across the country and rolling blackouts, and he's going to step in and save the day. I mean, him and his father and their relationship with Kuwait, the stabilization of the Middle East through what the military actions were about to take. On the one hand, it's going to make him a big hero with the people. It's not going to make him real popular with ecologists because it's, although I must admit that even though I'm an ecological person myself, I think a lot of the federal ecological regulations they've gotten out of hand under the Clinton administration. And I do think that, sections do need to be opened up for development. And if it's, if it has to do with the United States becoming more self-sufficient, in regards to oil, I'd have to be, all for that. And at the same time, we all want, nobody wants drilling in their own backyard, but, we need the power, we need the energy, and,
I'm all for going to get what is there, but look, in 40 years, at present rates of consumption, it's all going to be gone anyway.
Well, that's why I'm hoping that the biggest hope is going to be towards some kind of alternate power. And I'm
I think what she's asking is, if we're kind of moving the oil direction, which we are with GW,
right,
then, are we doing enough to prepare for the point when we don't have any more oil?
No, and it's just there's no easy answer to it. It's going to be, he's going to play to the people that put him in office.
Yeah.
So that's the best way I can put it.
Well,
because slashing this renewable fuels, by 22%, it seems like we should be keeping that in instead of giving this tax cut. And I think most people would agree with that.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that, the only thing that might reverse it would be if there's some kind of, and God forbid this doesn't happen, but if there is some kind of massive Islamic jihad that comes together and they decide to basically grab the United States by the short hairs and squeeze.
For this lady, about half the people actually agree and the other half don't, as told very clearly by the last election. We're out of time, Sean.
Okay.
You want to give your number one more time for the newsletter?
Okay, for the Delphi Associates newsletter, it's $60 for a one-year subscription. We have an honored elder discount of $45. The number is 888. That's 888-452-7999. That's 888-452-7999. You can order it off the website as well at www.delphiassociates, D-E-L-P-H-I, Associates, A-S-S-O-C-I-A-T-E-S, .org, or you can drop us a check at PRI, 2207 Hermosa Avenue, Hermosa Beach, California, 90254. It's all tax deductible, folks, because we're a tax-free religious educational organization. So, Art, thank you so much. You're my hero, and it's just great to hear you back on the air.
Sean, thanks. Thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good night. All right. There he was, folks, Sean David Morton from New York City. And I guess for this week, that's it for me. Ta-ta. I'm going to go get over more of the flu. Bye.